board member.
Unfortunately, Mr. Chair, the board chairman advised me day before yesterday that he would be at labor negotiations in Itegwini, so he wouldn't be able to make it yesterday.
Yeah, tell him I take umbrage to that. I take great umbrage to that. That if Parliament calls people to come and account for their affairs, and he tells me he's going to be somewhere else, I take great umbrage in that. I mean, you should have been sending, what is the chairperson going with the wage negotiations? Tell him I take it as an insult to this committee. Particularly with the problems that we've had with you guys, and now he doesn't come, the chairperson doesn't come. All right, well, I don't know. Does any of the members want to say something about that? For me, it's just unbelievable. Maybe it's a good reason why. Yeah, okay, I won't say it. Go ahead with your input.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, honorable members. My name is Shalay Stratum. I'm the CEO of We Say You Back. I'll be providing you with information which has of the movements of We Say Bag within the last financial year, what has been done and what we have been able to accomplish. I think if we can move to the next slide. As we're all aware, We Say Bag is a Section 21 company that was established by government as part of the Plastic Bag Initiative. It was created as a result of the plastic bag regulations and the legislation thereof, and is funded 100% by government. The board's composition at this stage is Mr. William Anolingo, who's the chairperson, and he's with Labour, with CEPAL. Mr. Sidney Gunana, who's also with Labour at CEPAL. Ms. Annaby Pretorius, which is the South African Plastic Recyclers Organization. Mr. Doe Stein, who's from the Plastic Federation of South Africa. Mr. Johan Peterser, who's from the Plastic Converters Association. Ms. Linda Godfrey, who is with the Institute of Waste Management of Southern Africa. And from the development side, they're represented by Ms. Dee Fisher from the Department of Water and Environmental Affairs. The current performance, which is to date, as when I say year to date here, it means to the end of March of this year, which was our financial year end. If we look at the regions, I've put it down in regions here, on the jobs that have been created by WESA, 134 jobs have been created in the Gauteng, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga area. Those are permanent jobs. The Northwest to Western Cape and Northern Cape, there have been 21 permanent jobs created there. KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape, and the Free State, 65 jobs, with a total of permanent jobs of 203. These are sustainable jobs where people are actually being able to become involved in the formal economy, which means they pay UIF and all the rest of it, and able to fend for their families. If you look at the other figures of the casual jobs that have been created, those are part-time jobs that have been created at the buyback centers. And if you look at indirect beneficiaries, when I say indirect beneficiaries, those are people that utilize We Say Bag funded buyback centers to earn a living by selling their products to those buyback centers. We've been able to reach 57,361 of those people. Those are the latest stats that we have at this moment moving forward. In terms of our other performances, we look at our schools education program. We've been able to reach 291 schools nationally that have benefited from our awareness and education initiatives with an average, if you look at an average of 800 learners per school, you look at reaching a total of 232,800 pupils. These programs are not only just awareness, we've also created the packs for the schools, education and learning packs for the schools, for them to be able to teach the youngsters on the ills of not managing their waste properly and keeping the environment clean, including your water resources as well. If you look at the Youth Empowerment Initiative program that we have, which is a program to meet with unemployed youth and to educate them on the possibilities of employment within the waste sector and the recycling center, basically what we were saying is which means, waste is wealth, and to try and get them involved in that economy. them to be involved in the waste management industry and the recycling industry directly with us. If you look at cleanup campaigns, which is also education and awareness that we do with municipalities in the past year, we have engaged with 15,000 people that have been involved in the cleanup campaigns, and over 18,000 bags of refuse were collected. The cleanup campaigns are not what they used to be in the past, where it becomes an issue of coming to do just a two-hour cleanup and then leaving. It's a matter of a two-day process where, you know, people are involved on both days, and cleanups are conducted to ensure that the towns are clean once we have left them, and there's also an educational message that goes with that and the training thereof. So it's more in-depth than it used to be in the past, and more people are being involved and assisting with cleaning their own environments. If we look at what we're looking forward to in 2011-2012, what we had forecast for was to establish or build 8 buyback centers, which employ approximately 15 permanent people and 30 casual workers, to support 9 external recycling centers employing 15 permanent and 30 casual, which is the basis that we found that's an average that those buyback centers can afford to sustain.
How many of these centers are there already?
At the moment, Mr. Chairman, there are 29. There are 10 that are WC bag built, and the rest are ones that we have supported throughout the country. And that number changes as we go, because people come in for assistance on a regular basis. We also.
What does it mean? I mean, what does it mean that we assist?
Mr. Chairman, there are recycling entrepreneurs that have been out there for a while that have been working without the necessary equipment to ensure that their business is sustainable. And what we then do is assist them with functional resources such as baling machines, scales, trolleys, and cages in order for them to go out and be able to collect more waste in order to make their business sustainable.
So you provide them with equipment?
That's correct, sir.
Okay. 29, you said?
That's correct.
And you want to add 8 to it?
That's correct, sir.
37 for the country.
And then another 9, which would be the ones that would be supported as well.
Okay.
Okay. Then, you know, from the workings of the work that we've done in the past.
Sorry, how many of them are the 29 is Buyiswas?
Of the 29, there are 10, sir.
10.
And there are 3 that are going to be.
19 are what you support.
That's correct.
Okay.
Okay,
go ahead.
Thank you, sir. In terms of waste management and the recovery of recycling materials, the standard that we say back has always been to build buyback centers and to assist existing recycling centers. We as management, with support from the board, have looked forward to moving ahead of that. At this stage, in South Africa at the moment, 80% of your recyclables are still ending up on landfill sites. With that, we are looking at the first project to be done, which was a materials recovery plant, which means all waste that would go to a landfill site, and we've earmarked a site in KwaZulu-Natal as a pilot project where the waste would then be separated at the landfill site at a materials recovery facility. So prior to the waste going onto the site, it would go through a materials recovery facility, which has all the equipment in it, your conveyor belts with people picking the different recyclables from that, all the way from plastic to paper to your metals, which from the research that we've done could employ 150 permanent employees on site and then provide for 75 casual jobs. But looking further to that, Mr. Chairman, we're looking at assisting the municipalities in terms of providing trolleys and cages for the people to go out from door to door in the suburbs to be able to separate that waste at source, so it comes in clean to the materials recovery plant, which means then there's more value to the product. So we anticipated having to be able to do that in 2011-2012. The 3 buyback centers that have been completed now, which would add to the numbers that we have now, is the one in Pokeng in the northwest, Oriental Plaza in the Eastern Cape, and one in St. Lucia in the northern KwaZulu-Natal, which have been completed by the contractors and are ready to be handed over to the beneficiaries so they can commence work at those centers. We're looking at this year as well. It's looking at 346 schools to benefit from our schools education program, which we had put in our business plan. And then we're also looking at 15 schools in the Gauteng area to do a pilot project on green ambassadors, to have children that are then trained by us who are able to then go into other institutions and assist them with them being able to be trained in order to build that capacity within the learner sector of our society to allow the you know, for better management of the environment by our youth. We're also looking at 8 youth empowerment initiatives to empower the unemployed youth to be able to try and get them to be part of the workforce in terms of recycling and also waste management. And then we're looking at 20 cleanup campaigns that we would do. They attract about 300 to 500 people per community per campaign in order to get awareness out there. I just wanted to expand on the awareness. At the moment, we see VAG in partnership with Indalietu had launched on the 5th of June 2010 the National Waste Management Awareness Campaign. We're involved with that. From the figures that I got from the consultants in terms of the roadshows and all the work that they have done, we in terms of capacitating the society as a whole with regard to waste management and the environment, they're claiming that we've been able to at least reach 5 million people through that campaign. So we're working in partnership with them on that program. Mr. Chair, I am aware that there was, with the invite to this committee meeting, there was a report back that was supposed to be given on the strategic plan. I must stress that the strategic plan that we see back has not been done, and that is based on some of the some of the turbulence within the board. I don't know if that's the most PC way to put it, but there's been a lack of agreement within the board to go ahead and go through the strategic planning process. Management did put together a straw dog of a strategic plan which was circulated to all board members, but that has never been commented on, and we have never actually sat down with the board and gone through and been able to put together the necessary strategic plan for the company. If I must add to that, I'll put just a bullet there with the turnaround strategy. Having looked at all the different issues with regard to Buise Bag and the functioning of Buise Bag and Buise Bag trying to be able to meet its mandate of job creation, poverty alleviation, and youth empowerment, we looked at then a turnaround strategy to look at different ways and means of being able to move the company forward and to provide that to the board. Unfortunately, we haven't had that opportunity yet, but the way that management of Buise Bag is looking at Buise, we're looking at it in a holistic picture. Our philosophy as management is to look at Buise to say that we need to create local economic development, which means in the rural areas. And it can be done, and we've looked at that, and we looked at that closely in order to create jobs for people at home rather than people migrating back and forth. So it becomes a societal issue, and we like to look at it in the broader sense that let's create jobs at home so people are spending time with their families rather than people migrating to Johannesburg, Cape Town, and Durban for employment opportunities. And we are looking at the turnaround having to set up hubs where the buyback centers then provide waste to those hubs where it is processed and there's a value add in order for that business to be more sustainable and those people to earn a decent living. When I say decent living, I'm alluding to a person earning an approximation of 4,000 Rand per month from the work that can be created locally in those areas. From the statistics that we have, for example, in Sigayetu, which is in the Eastern Cape, between Insigata and Somo, we figured out that with the paper that's collected, by the recyclers within that area, they can actually provide, we can provide equipment that can make toilet paper and set up smaller industry to be able to sell that to clinics, hospitals, and provincial and also municipal offices, which would then create a number of jobs within the local area rather than people, rather than sending all that waste through to Durban or Cape Town to be processed. So that's, yeah, our turnaround strategy was looking at basically that and seeing how we can move forward with that. But then again, since the board hasn't met since January, we haven't had that opportunity as yet as management.
Why are they not meeting? What is the...
Mr. Chair...
What does they say? I mean...
Mr. Chair,
you just tell us. I mean, it's got nothing to do with you. You just tell us, what are they saying? Why aren't they meeting? You ask them, please meet. And what do they say? What does the chair say?
It's a matter, sir, if I look at that the... I'm hoping I'm not going to be speaking out of turn here.
Hey, you can't speak out of turn.
If I analyze the situation, the board, in my opinion, is split because you have an element of labor and you have an element of industry. My understanding of a board is that a board should be independent and should not come with other interests. Industry has its interests and labor has its interests. So, and the Articles of Association, they say if you get to a deadlock, that means you need to go through arbitration. And a lot of the issues with regard to the moving forward of WeCBag have to do with the non-agreement amongst board members.
On what? This is just recycling. It's not production. It's not... So what are they... What is the difference of opinion? I mean, you know, do you recycle bags and do you collect them? I mean, you know, it's not... I mean, you know, even I can do it. It's not rocket science. It's not rocket science. I can't see why... On what are they split? What does the one want? What does the other
from,
want?
From the inception of WeCBag, and I'm saying this at risk, but at the, from the inception of WeCBag, industry has not been in favor of the entity. And because their interests are there. For example, the Plastic Recyclers Organization is there to represent the interests of their organization. Should WeCBag beneficiaries then start competing in that market, they would then turn down any initiative that is going to allow our beneficiaries to go to the next level. Because at the moment, we are collectors of recyclables to sell them on. Once we want to move to the next level, which is
where... It's a huge mistake creating a recycling entity and actually putting the recyclers in the entity to help run it.
So I concur with you 100% there. And there's also the issue of the plastic industry. It's not anything that's been hidden. The plastic industry believes that all the money collected from the plastic levy belongs to them. And they've stated that publicly. So it wouldn't be something else, you know what I'm saying? Which is what creates some of the splits within the board. You know, the board, from its inception, has been conflicted, Mr. Chair, in my opinion.
Yeah, Ed, let's see here what the problem is.
Chair, I think in our view, what we've established is one of the founding problems actually emanates from the original negotiated MOA, where it was agreed that it would be a Section 21 company, but that would be solely funded by public money. So we have the problem that the board is constituted and managed through the Companies Act because it's a Section 21 company. Therefore, they are not bound by the governance structures and requirements of the PFMA, while the funding that they are receiving, and from our side as the accounting officer, we are bound by the PFMA. So, for example, although the original MOA alluded to the fact that the minister would be appointing the board, the board is actually nominated by the three different interest groups, and then the board as nominated elect the chairperson. So the whole governance institution or the way that the governance structure is established is not conducive to for us to exercise the PFMA exercise. So I think the fundamental problem is that this whole thing is governed through articles of association of a Section 21 company.
It's conceptualized.
So I think that is the challenge that we have. If we talk about turnaround strategy, it must be to correct that fundamental problem that was set up in the beginning. And in doing that, we need to consider what we call cost effectiveness. And I think some of the analysis that you would see that we have done is the administrative cost of doing this work, which is good work, has escalated substantially, while the project money has not. The project money has remained more or less the same or with marginal increases, while the administrative costs have increased substantially. So we need to ask ourselves what is the most cost-effective way and accountable way in order to ensure that these good things happen in a way that's cost-effective.
That review and things, stuff, is that all now public knowledge?
Jane, no, it's not. We've provided it to you in terms of briefing you. We have had an engagement. There was a board meeting that happened last week, Friday. The board did at that meeting not reach consensus on the winding up of the company. They have subsequently, though, informally notified us that they, in principle, support the winding up. So we believe that we are going the winding up route, and then
so we can make that
function.
Information available.
Yes, we can.
Okay, we'll just hand out to members. Okay.
Chair, I must just qualify that the information in there is as per the information that we had in January. So it's not the final statements. So just that some of the figures that you are hearing here today is different from what is in the report.
It's the principles that I'm talking about. All right, go ahead, Mr. Stratton.
Thank you, sir. In terms of the budget, we have received funds in the past 3 years. 2009, we received $20 million.
How long have you existed?
Since 2002, Mr. Chair.
And is your money almost I mean, 2009 was $20 million. Has it always been, on average, what did you get over that period?
It's escalated from year to year. It started out at $12 million, it went up to 20, and it went to 35, and then this year would have been the first year that we would receive.
And in all those years that from you started getting $12 million from 2002 till now, almost nine years, eh?
That's correct, Mr.
You've
Chief.
Been able to build 9, 10.
That's correct.
Buyback centers over 10 years. Or 9 years, sorry, nine, almost 10. Okay. All right. You know, it's this issue of performance and how we. Okay. I understand.
I think just a matter of clarity, from my research, I joined BC back in September of 2009. Just from my research, it looked like activities at WCBAG began in 2006. 2005-06 is when they actually started with the...
But they were getting a budget from 2002.
No.
Oh.
That's okay. When the company was established. And that was finalized in 2004, and then it's 2004, and then it started operating in 2005.
Okay, go ahead.
So if we look at the 2010-2011... we received $20.9 million versus the $30 million that we're supposed to receive, and then this year, 2010-2011, we received 17.5, which was received in December. Our financial year begins in April, and we only received the money in December. And then we received another $6 million in March to be able to carry us through with the work that we had promised, because we anticipated that we wouldn't receive our funds on time, which would have been the first of April. It's been a historical issue with WCBAG receiving funds late. I think blame must be put directly on the board, and some blame can be issued to the department, but it's the board's responsibility and the management's responsibility to make sure that a business plan is in on time in order for that funding to be released on time. And it's been a historical thing. The 2010-2011 business plan was submitted to the department on time in August, and because of the turbulence within the board and the back and forth of the business plan and the board failing to be able to approve it, to get it to environmental affairs because of different issues they had with the business plan, it took a long time for it to get to the department, which was which has resulted in the money not being available on time. So there's a lot of issues around that that emanate from the strategic drive of the business from the board side. But you know, we've done as management, we've done the best we can do to do that. And Ms. McCord has just said now, there is a process in place to see if those things can be rectified. Can we go to the next slide, please?
If you allow me to just comment on the statements made. I think one of the concerns of the department is that the MOA between the department and Buhisa on the releasing of funds clearly state that it is on approval of a business plan that is of the quality acceptable to the department. So we cannot release funds on draft business plans with unclear deliverables. So we need clear deliverables in order to release the money. Secondly, I think there has also been a history of rollovers that even though the funds may not be transferred, and I'll use the last couple of financial years as an example, the company never had a negative or zero balance in their bank accounts at the beginning of the financial year. This financial year, for example, there was still 18 million unspent funds in the bank account on the 1st of April. So I think that needs to be taken into consideration when we talk about when money gets transferred and on what basis.
Now, I accept that legally that is so, but the fact that the department let it drag on so long, I mean, you know, look at from the beginning, May, October, January, you're now taking steps, but for many years we've just allowed the thing to slide. But let's leave it at that. People will comment on that, okay? But I accept, particularly because it's government money, you can only clearly give it if there's a proper compliance with whatever the agreement says. Go ahead, get to this next one, the financial statements, which seems to be a disaster.
Mr. Chair, if you look at the financial statements 2008, we see BAG had a clean audit, but the audit was not conducted according to AG guidelines, which are stipulated in the Articles of Association and based on the PFMA, and that was not done. In 2009, we see BAG had a disclaimer because the auditors could not rely on the opening balances that they received, and the audit was also not conducted according to AG guidelines. And where the auditors recommended that a forensic audit be conducted.
Was that done?
The forensic audit was conducted, Mr. Chairman. However,
what was the finding?
There were findings, and there were individuals that were that were found to have alleged to have done wrong. Those individuals that were companies that were doing work services of providing services to BC BAG. Because it was alleged that the fraud was above 100,000 Rand, the board chair and myself did report that to the Commercial Crimes Unit and also to the South African Revenue Services for them to sort of their process. So there is a case that's carrying on at the moment of investigations into those four companies that had allegedly defrauded the company and also had defrauded SARS. The other allegations were there were two board members implicated. There was a process that began, but those allegations have never been tested based on the flaws within the Articles of Association. When I say flaws within the Articles of Association, the Articles of Association state that you have two categories. One is industry and the one is labor. Each has one vote. And it says that only that category from which that member comes from can discipline a member. So the board itself cannot discipline the member. It would have to be the constituency from which that member comes that would, then go through a process of testing that. So
how can that be true? How did we ever agree to things like that?
Mr. Chair, it's within the articles of association.
And who drafted them?
From my understanding, sir, they were drafted by the board.
The quicker this thing is wound up, I must tell you, the better. I mean, I can't believe that the government's allowed this to go on so long. It's unbelievable. It's absolutely mind-boggling that we somehow empower the private sector to deal with this, and the private sector just absolutely, through our own stupidity as well, with what we, you know, our conceptualization, how we conceptualize it, but it's unbelievable. I'm staggering here when I hear these things. So the two board members are not being acted against because the articles say that must, but are the two board members, have they also been reported to the police?
The forensic audit and all that information was made available to the Commercial Crimes Unit, sir. Yes.
And are they being investigated as well, the board members?
From my understanding, from the investigating officer, Mr. Baloy, they are.
Could the department get us a report from the police? Ask them. We don't want a report on the evidence and stuff. We want a report on the progress of the investigation. Okay? All right, go ahead.
Yeah, in terms of that, just for a bit more clarity, Mr. Chair, is the board did take action, and they did suspend the two board members. It then ended up being a long legal process and a back and forth where it actually came out that based on the Articles of Association, they could not proceed and were advised that they needed to call back those board members to take their rightful positions on the board, which has taken place.
Which group is this that's not taking action? Is it business or labor?
It's business, sir. It's industry, sir.
You're telling me, is there any media here, that the business component of this board, that there's a forensic report that says that two of the board members are implicated, that the Articles of Association clearly say that grouping must take action. Originally they suspended the people, then they came back to look at the articles and say that that group can only discipline, not the board as a whole. And that group has now taken them back on the board and refused to take action against them.
That is correct, Mr. Chairman.
It's an absolute disgrace. And I hope the media gets these people's names, whoever they are, and really makes this a serious issue. Mr. Morgan.
How, if at all, does the recently amended Company Act, which has come into force commencement, about 2 months ago, I don't know if it's coming out in Section 21, but actually, have you looked at how the new Company Act relates to these kinds of operations? Because from what I understand, the burden and penalty and responsibility of good governance are even more severe under the new company act than they were under the previous act. So I'm just wondering if you've actually looked at this in the context of the recently promulgated act and not the old act, which was considerably weaker than the one that has come before us, the one that Parliament passed and has been promulgated.
I think you can do that, but I think the problem is going to be when it comes to crime, you can't do things retrospectively. So I think that may be a problem. But it may be that it's worthwhile looking at the Act, because it may be that the Act creates procedures for how you can deal with directors in terms of the company, not necessarily in terms of criminally. And that may be still applicable, okay? The 100,000... I know that comes from the Criminal Corruption Act or something. Anything above 100,000, you've got a duty to report it to the police. And in that duty, you reported these two board members as well.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
I think you must also give us this forensic audit. Give us the forensic audit, plus get us a progress report from the police, okay? And whatever steps you took, if you wrote letters or whatever, I want all that, the whole paper trail, okay, with the forensic audit. I think we should have copies of all that. And if, I don't know when this company is going to be wound up, CEO, but if it's wound up, I expect the department to take over all those responsibilities as far as this forensic audit is concerned and to push it to its logical conclusion. Okay? All right, so let's get those stuff. And then the last one now, you say you change your auditors. So they conduct the audit according to the guidelines for the first time, and then there's still a disclaimer.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
What are the problems? Is there money that's disappeared?
No, sir. That's categorically, I can say.
Except for those four companies.
Has not been the case. The reason for that is that Buisa eBag was deregistered from VAT because in 2008-2009 they were not submitting VAT returns as scheduled. So we were then deregistered.
Who deregistered you?
SARS.
So if you don't pay, they take you off the books.
That's correct. So
that's a nice way of getting around not paying that. You just don't pay and they deregister. I mean, it can't be true. I mean, it can't. How can that be true? They took you off because you didn't pay.
That's
correct. And despite you still existing.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Aye.
One good thing I must say, we've managed to be re-registered with SARS, and we have been able to recover the $3.3 billion that was owed to us by SARS that was sitting there. So that's something we've been able to accomplish within the last year.
Yeah.
In order to rectify the situation.
I hope this is a lesson to this department. I hope this is a lesson, a very painful lesson, but a lesson nonetheless. That one doesn't create structures like this. I mean, when you create companies like this that fall outside of all the rules of government, at least whatever rules there are, it's, you know, one can then try and apply them. In any case, go to the next slide.
If you look at the non-compliances that came out, is that we weren't complying with PFMA. The Accountant General had actually sent a letter to us stating that whether we are a listed entity or not, because we receive 100% funding from government, that we have to comply with PFMA. This was argued in the board on many different occasions and created very much animosity between the two groupings. In that regard, and as management, we had advised from my inception of joining WeSee back in 2009 that we need to comply with all legislation as we are utilizing government funding. The Treasury regulations were not being complied with. The Companies Act, certainly things in the Companies Act were not being complied with. We do not have an audit committee. We do not have a risk committee. We do not have a CFO. We finally managed to be able to convince the board in September of 2010 to appoint internal auditors, as we had none.
These COs, that non-compliance with the Companies Act, no audit committee, and all that stuff there, that may be worthwhile what Mr. Morgan has raised. If there is steps to be taken against those directors in terms of those, we expect them to be taken. The non-compliance with the Act and those things. It's just absolutely criminal. Go on.
Mr. Chair, from management side and working with the department, a lot of these things we have worked towards. We had many meetings with the former COO, acting CEO, COO of Environmental Affairs, with the Chief Director and others to try and get to some sort of compliance and work towards compliance, noting that it would be a process. But it all hinged on board approval of different policies and the rest of it. We have written and produced a number of policies. However, those have not been approved by the board yet. And we're still waiting for that. So I don't know that's going to be looked at with the process that we're going through now. You know, I don't know how that's going to go forward, but that's the process that we just have to follow.
The way it must go forward is that this must happen quickly. It mustn't happen, and I don't want approval from anywhere. This thing must happen. I mean, this is just unacceptable. I've never heard of anything in my life like this. Never. And I've heard of some funny things. This is really the worst I've ever heard.
From management side, Mr. Chair, we have been proactive, and we have gone ahead and produced a lot of policies and to be put in place. It just was a process that was hindering us a bit. But
we must go and look at the Companies Act. Yeah. And if these directors, we must take action against them. We must take action. Okay. Next one.
I think, in a nutshell, Mr. Chair, I've tried to give you, as I've been open, transparent, and provided as much information that I can at this point in time. I'm sure there are going to be some questions which are going to be asked of board members. Unfortunately, the board chair is not here. We are looking forward now. The CEO has informed me as well that there is a movement going forward in terms of the in-principle agreement of the board to wind up the company. That moving forward, I know it's going to make my life much easier because there's a lot of uncertainty amongst my employees. Thank you.
All right, questions. Mrs. Kosana, Mr. Morgan, Ms. Bengu, Ms. Lutetsi, Ms. Manganya, Dr. Juan.
Can I go ahead?
Yes.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I did not hear maybe the position of the gentleman was presenting here, maybe, so I can be able to talk.
CEO.
Thank you very much.
He's
sorry for that.
Head of management.
Yes. Chairperson, as I was listening from the start of the presentation, I find myself grappling to get the content of what the company is doing. Really, I can't get the content, really. And also, Chairperson, when you compare the work done by the company, one may ask maybe many questions in relation to records of what was happening, especially when you talk about the performance and priority areas, those 346 schools will be benefiting, and those who benefited, if you can get a record of those schools, I should think it will be much better for us. And also, Chairperson, when you check the budget and annual financial statement on the issues of non-compliance, then one will say, maybe in one word or one sentence, the company is not existing. Why? Because Chairperson, you cannot have a company which is not complying to any one of these. At least one. I should think it can be something. But the whole of these things which are written here, not complying, then why the department is giving money to such a company? Because the company is not complying. And the department must clarify us of how long did this company not complying on these matters, and were the department giving money to this company even if it was not complying with the acts that they're supposed to comply with? And Chairperson, in terms of the auditing, it's very clear that the funds of this company, they are not properly handled. The records are telling us very clearly that there is a problem in this company. And as we are saying, the chairperson of the board is not here, it's only the CEO. Then you can see for yourself that there is a problem. Somebody is running away to come and account to this portfolio committee, then which means the company is not having a management in terms of the board. That board is not functional. That board is not doing well. And I must say, Chairperson, to the department, this company is failing us, is politically and administratively failing us on the ground. Because this is the company that can make an awareness in terms of recycling. This is the company that can create more jobs in the within the country. But all what they are saying throughout the provinces, I never see anyone. But they say there are centers, 8 centers, but when you look to the job creation, 15 people appointed for 8 centers. No, it's not correct. I should think we must get the true reflection of what the company is doing and what the company is expecting to do for the communities. And you cannot operate within the straight plan. No one can operate within the plan. How can you work without the plan? Thank you, Chairperson.
I think it was Mr. Morgan next time.
Thanks very much. Thank you, Chair. I'm glad that in the personal capacities, at least for the last 18 months, I've never bought a plastic bag. So as a member of the public, I'm not complicit to this in any way. But that's not the case for millions of South Africans who obviously pay the plastic bag levy. And I mean, Chairperson, I just think it's worth, you know, stating the history behind this because it's important. And I certainly don't think it's any cheap shot, but this was a levy which at the start was resisted. It was implemented and has significantly resulted in reducing the amount of plastic bags in South Africa, which were regarded as our national flower. I think it was Vally Musa. He used to speak about our national flower along our highways, stuck into fences and all the rest of it, the plastic bag. And we have succeeded successfully, and there were consequences for jobs as well in the plastic bag industry of reducing the amount of plastic bags used. We all pay a tax on this, and we are not, as the taxpayer, getting value for money, and we know that. And the governance issues are shocking, and I suspect that the public, who consume plastic bags, have every right to feel let down. Now, we have an obligation as a portfolio committee to have oversight over this to make sure it is fixed. The plastic bag levy was really the first environmental tax in South Africa, and there are going to be many more in South Africa going forward. And they are always resisted, and they normally result in positive behavior changes. So we have to fix this. Anyway, the cat is out of the bag, and you know people are going to know increasingly about what is happening in Beisa eBag in the period going forward, probably from tomorrow's newspapers. The publicity that you've been receiving in Beisa eBag is obviously, it hasn't been good. I mean, the carte blanche piece a few weeks ago did nothing for the image. You might have different views on the content of it, but the point is there's a very bad perception of Beisa. And it has to be fixed. So I'm glad that it's being wound down. That is all good. I would concur that there has to be consequences for those who have misgoverned this entity. The conclusion can't just be the winding down and the creation of something new. There has to be consequences. I'm very interested if you could just, for clarity, really just restate that article of association that doesn't allow you to take action against your own board members. I'm confused by it because, you know, I don't understand how we as legislators, in our acts that we've created, actually created the ability for an entity to create their own rules like this, you know. And so if you could restate why that was the case. So is there actually a sticking point there that is stopping? The next thing?
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, one expects if the department creates the company,
yeah,
the department should put up this articles of association, all those kind of things,
yeah,
because it's their company. So that I have the same problem with. I'd like to hear
yeah.
that answer.
I really want you to go into detail here. I'm not saying I don't believe you, but I'm surprised by it. Next thing. Then we go into to the subject. Okay, so this is going to get wound up. Now, I've got a whole bunch of documents on my desk here which suggest that a service provider is going to be appointed as to be wound up. Now, let me first make a comment and then also just talk about the way forward, Chair. There has to be a significant debate about who takes this project forward and who does it and what the nature of it is. I've never been a fan of BCE Bank, mainly because I cannot tangibly ever measure the success of what BISA does. BISA is able to say we have touched 300, 400 people in a campaign and they were involved. What we can't do is work out the transformative quality of the work that you do, in the sense of how have you impact on a person's life. So what? 300 kids for 2 hours on a Saturday morning cleaned up a park. People do that every day in South Africa. NGOs do it. Civil society organizations do it. Church organizations do it. Sports clubs do it. Mama, grandpa and grandpa walking their dog on a Saturday morning do it. So what, actually? Why must we use taxpayers' money to basically fund something of which there is no tangible transformative benefit? You can't sit here and tell me that if you take 500 kids on a cleanup, that the next day they're not going to drop litter, quite frankly. I've always thought, Chairperson, that Buyisa eBay, given a budget, didn't have enough ways to spend their budget and basically had these massive cleanups in order to spend money, basically, so that they could come to us at the end of the year and say, look, we've spent money and we should all feel so good because thousands of kids have got to clean up. Well, anyway, I just think that we as a society should not be relying on a little organization like you to be doing that kind of stuff. It is our collective role. And the discussion we have to make is how we make cleaning South Africa and recycling South Africa is everyone's business. And I've never liked the idea of BCE Bag because it's regionally biased, and you'll tell me that you've got something in every province, but it's not true. You are heavily focused to certain regions. It incenses me as a consumer that when I did buy plastic bags, I had to buy plastic bags in KZN, and the money was being spent in Northwest and in Mpumalanga and the rest of it. I know that ultimately it's a little bit more diversified now. It's just not fair what has been happening over the last few years. The buyback centres are lying, many of them are not even operational. So that incenses me as well. So yes, you're going to wind up, but what is the next entity? Now, I'm not saying we have to discuss it now. The point is, I'm not convinced the department should, I don't even know how you would do it better. This is a local government function, and it needs to be industry plans. Chairperson, this committee worked on the Waste Act in 2008. An incredible piece of legislation, empowering legislation, that gives the minister the power, in consultation with all the various sectors, to institute waste management plans based on reducing what each sector produces. Recycling, reuse, less to landfill. In the same way, that Waste Act allowed made it compulsory for every municipality to come up with a waste management plan. Now, I'm the first to agree that not every municipality in this day and age has the capacity at the moment. But we have legislation, it's enabling legislation. We have big sectors with lots of money, and we've got this BISA concept, which is limited, its footprint is small, the value for money and return on investment is pathetic, quite frankly. So that is the discussion. Now, I don't know what the plan is. I really just want to comment, do you have an idea? You have to present it now. Or are you winding this up, going to keep it in abeyance, and then find something else to spend with it? Because I'm sure the Treasury Chairperson, as you know, a very difficult organization, but I mean, I have respect for them, must say, well, they have no obligation to give us any money for recycling, despite them collecting the plastic bag levy. Because they don't actually, Chairperson, I'm sure you know this, give us the whole amount of money anyway. They give us a small percentage of what is collected each year. They could just as easily say the plastic bag levy is there to change behavior and reduce plastic use in society. That is a public good. We will happily take this money and we will use it for whatever else we want. They don't even have to fund recycling, quite frankly. They have no obligation to do so. So those are my comments. And to the CEO, I thank you for your frankness. I suspect this is a very difficult organizational environment to work in, and I think you've been the most frank and honest with this committee, and I certainly laud you for that. And I suspect you work in an organization which is a bit like a poison chalice working into. So thank you for that, and I hope that you'll be fully involved in obviously finding ways through your organizational experience. You probably more so than most people have an idea of what is wrong with BEISA and how to get better value for money out of it. In conclusion, I'll just go back to my original point, Chair, and I apologize, I'm passionate about the subject, is that we need transformative experiences in South Africa, not touching the lives of a kid for a day or an hour or whatever, and changing entire society. Yandala Yetu will get into the neck from us next, quite frankly, because, and I'm, don't worry, I'm just playing. But the point is, we have to be obviously talk about how we mainstream this stuff. And funding cleanup campaigns and all of that, and ministers walking through towns picking up litter, it's good for the day, it's good for the news headline the next day. I'm not sure we're using money properly in South Africa. I'm not sure we're accounting to the taxpayers and the users of this levy. And all in all, I'm bitterly disappointed. But I thank you for your frankness, and I'm sure this committee is going to be very interested in what happens to the wind-up and what happens here going forward with regards to how, if at all, the plastic bag levy is going to be used to reduce waste in South Africa.
Ms. Bengu.
Thank you, Chair. This question is for the Department of Environmental Affairs, is to provide us with more details. Why so little oversight was done on this entity? And why were these problems allowed to escalate for so many years, as this has been reported, that all started since the inception of the entity? And whether there are any steps that has been taken by the department to correct this? And for the department to also give us a proper report on how much of the government's money has been wasted. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Tsetsi.
I think we have the same concerns as members of the committee here. I think I'm covered by the speakers. But given the situation, one is tempted to ask the reason why the chairperson is not here.
Yeah, he's running away, I'm afraid. Obviously, if I had to be a chairperson of such a mess, maybe I've taken more drastic steps than just running away. But that's a valid question. Fall on his sword. Ms. Mangani.
Thank you, Chair. Other speakers have already covered me, but I was just saying, I don't know what to say, I'm delighted that at the end the department has seen to it that they must do the winding of this Buisa bag. But my concern is that we have spent a lot of money on this project, thinking that there is something that is happening, but there is nothing. So it means we let our people down, those who wanted to rely on this Buisa bag. We have the money, but we don't have the capacity, because when I hear the CEO giving us the information, this Buisa bag didn't have the good foundation. It means when we come up with boards or structures, we must be able to have the good foundation, because almost is what let us down, of doing some, creating something that won't walk or fly. It's a problem with us. So we need to put more focus. Even if when we are saying we are winding, we must have something in mind. You have seen where we have gone wrong. Then we must try and correct what we have done wrong, so that when we started something, we mustn't repeat what we were doing. So I'm just concerned about the money that we spend since the formation of this, and then we have seen that it doesn't have legs. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you very much. Dr. Kwan?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think this entity is, this meeting, look in the morning, is like the fun, very funny. Firstly, I think through to the last 2 days, this meeting, all the entity meeting coming to the with our committee, all the entity, not any member coming attend for this committee. I think it is not a problem from the entity, it's a problem from department. You heard that all the entity money come from department, then the department haven't got the power for the invite all the some member, even the chairperson or the board member coming attend this meeting. I think it is from department side that you must be concerned. Don't say every time it's an entity, it's a problem. Then I think it's, I also like to highlight that for the Honorable Morgan in this committee already 7 years, he is represented by the DA, opposition party. But how can allow that this entity like this, the financial statement like this? Always is my colleague is a complaint, is talking long the concern and the comment, but it's the same story here. I don't understand. And very funny, for this company never paid the VAT. This company registered by 2004. You got to register number inside 2004-01-391-808. Then in 2008, you don't pay the VAT, it's over the 4 million. How is the department allowed like this? Because like a CEO, you say, every financial year you submit it to your business plan, then you get your money from the department. It's so easy for get the money from department. 20 million, 29 million, just one book, business plan. Chairperson, I like this business plan. 2010 and 2009, must copy, submit to the committee. I want to see what is the business plan. Can too easy get the money from the department. And from the inside of financial report, there is a 4.1 million this one, this bet is a write off. How you can write an off? Then use the is a refund from the SARS. You haven't paid the SARS, it's the 4.1 million rent for the VAT. How is the SARS can refund to you? Where is the refund? Can you give me the detail? And other funny thing, you pay the bonus. This bonus is not a small amount, the corporate chair. They pay the bonus is $700. $703,000 for bonus. This funny company can pay the bonus. I can't believe. You don't pay the VAT, but you can pay the bonus. This company also can apply the business plan to the department. I need the 15 million, I don't need the 20 million, 29 million. It's too easy.
Did you get a bonus?
It's inside the financial statement.
No, sir, Mr. Chair.
No bonus.
No.
So I would then have a heart attack, but okay.
So inside is showed the bonus, $703,000.
They
showed? Yes, yeah. You must see that it's a page. This is PHO3, it is this page. You see the bonus inside. This one is for the March. March bonus is 7,330 rand. Why you say no bonus? You must see the, your financial statement. This is you, this is your. Okay, then after you can reply this question.
Where do you find that? because I didn't see that.
You can see there is a...
Oh, yeah, at the end of the document.
Yeah, you can see the PEC document, because our member don't see the PEC site.
All right, well, you can answer that question.
Yeah.
It's been pointed out to you.
Then I think it's Chairperson. Why you pay the consultant fee? Why you need a consultant? This is a small company. You need to pay the consultant fee. It's 30,000 rand per year. And in the big issue, I like to see the your school education program, because it is a big amount, 700,000, 759,000. Like my colleague say, you teach for the a school student, or what you make this program, you spend 759,000 for the school program. I want to know how you utilize this money. Because your board member, no anyone can come respond to here, even your chairperson. So I think there is a lot of questions. They must reply. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Mangani, another question?
Yeah, it's just a comment, chairperson. I think there must be a greater discussion about this board, so not only this one. It seems... all the boards that are non-functioning, we need to, in this committee, we need to have a discussion, or either in Parliament, because it's a waste. We need to talk about this non-functionality of the boards. I don't mean this one only. I mean the other boards that are not functioning. We need to have the discussion in this committee. Thank you.
No, we should, and you know, if we get them, of course, yesterday we had four good functioning ones, but as you point out, there are ones that are also very bad, and we need to get a general strategy how to deal with these. I think one of the problems that exist here is that the model that was chosen is completely wrong. I mean, it's just wrong. And I think the issue that Mr. Morgan raised definitely resonated with me as well. Where does this function where should it lie? Clearly we know that local government are the ones that do the recycling and so on, so on, so on. Is there a place for a national department to create business entities to provide for recycling? You know, it's a question, it's a valid question to be asked, and so on. But those are all the questions, CEO and department, let's have responses.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. The Honourable Babas Kosan. In terms of the background of WISA and what WISA really, really does, is we create or accept proposals from cooperatives and from entrepreneurs who are interested in recycling. There is a criteria in place for them to be funded. With that, we once they've met that criteria, we then provide that funding. It could be in the construction of a buyback center facility where they would then be trained by us, or from the whole spectrum from business management all the way through to all the different types of recyclables that are out there. So it's not dealing only with the plastic bag. So once they've established that entity and the land has been provided by the municipality for them to then continue with their business, we then hand that structure to them with the necessary resources such as baling machines to bale the waste and also cages and trolleys to be able to, and scales to be able to weigh the waste. When people come in to sell to them, then they can weigh the waste and be able to pay those people. So it becomes their personal, that co-op becomes their business. And then for the broader society, for people that are out there that are collecting within the communities that would like to sell that product, then it provides an avenue for them closer to home, for them to be able to then go ahead and sell their recyclable products to that center in order for them to earn some money. And then that is on the buyback center side of things. In terms of the youth empowerment, projects that we have. There are many unemployed youth, especially in the more rural areas. And from the work that we have done, we've established that in some of the rural areas, and then again I'll use Nsigayetu, which is in the Eastern Cape, everybody would look at that and say, well, you've got Tofimvaba and Tromo, small towns, not much recyclables coming out of there. But with the work that we've done there, there is a large amount of recyclables that come out of your bigger shops, which are Boxer Cash and Gary, Rhino, those types of places, which is very clean material, to be able to sustain that. So when we go out there, we are educating that youth to be able to then be involved in the waste management industry, the environmental industry, or the recycling industry. Of the buyback centers that we've built, there are three buyback centers that have been dedicated solely, that have been built on the basis of our youth empowerment program. So you're finding with that education, they don't necessarily have to rely on WISA bag in order to go out and find employment. They can also then have that knowledge that they've received from us in terms of the workshops that we provide for them to be able to go out and seek employment in the environmental field. In terms of the schools program that we do have, the schools program, we started that program out with, first of all, putting together an education manual to be able to then teach the teachers on how that manual works for the betterment of the students. So it becomes, and working with the governing bodies of those schools, it becomes in part of the normal everyday education of the student for them to be able to, and it goes from all the way from elementary school to high school. So, you know, you have board games and that type of thing, you know, just to make the children aware of the environment, especially when it comes to the ability to recycle items. So what I had explained a bit earlier, and I think I need to go back to it, there is the opportunity, and that's where WISA eBag is going. Since 2009 when I joined, is trying to push WISA eBag to the point that we are creating local economic development. When I say that, it's being able to, as I said earlier, provide the processing of material. I can give an example. For example, if you look at your PET, which is your plastic bottles, PET in the Eastern Cape area is selling at 30 cents a kg. If it is washed and granulated, you can sell it for 11 rand 40 a kg. So that's where I was pushing WISA eBag to go to, that next step of a value add to the product in order to make those businesses viable in the more rural type areas, in order to create jobs closer to home for people. You know, if you look at Durban and Johannesburg and other areas, the price goes up to 75 cents. But then that's the person that's groveling, that's going through your black bag on your sidewalk and in the rain, in the cold, and transporting that stuff to a person who's going to then make 11 rand 40 out of it, you know, which is where we are trying to reach that balance. So, you know, we've done a lot in that regard in terms of adding value to products so people are able to earn what I would call a decent living. In terms of the performance of WISA, I know the mention I made in my presentation, the 346 schools, we know all those schools by name. We have all the statistics that we get from them, and we will make them available, Mr. Chairman. So our schools program is not merely a 1 to 2 hour workshop little session with kids. It's more something that's permanent within the educational program that we have been liaising with the Department of Education and the governing bodies closer to home on trying to do to ensure that we're looking at the future of the environment in a better light. In terms of the auditing and the funds not being properly handled, I'm not going to try and defend that at all. All I can say is that as management, we commenced a process from September 2009 when I joined. And I must tell this committee that when I joined, we didn't even have an asset register for WISA eBag. I'll be blatantly honest about that. We didn't have an asset register. We had baling machines, we had scales, we had trolleys, we had equipment all over the countryside. Nobody knew where it was. Okay? So all those issues started being put together by management when I joined in 2009 to try and ensure that we are protecting our assets and we're looking at the risk and all the rest of it. So, yes, there have been problems, but management has, in working together with the department, then tried to correct what was wrong. And it is a process, and it has taken a bit of time under the circumstances which I had mentioned a bit earlier. In terms of the job numbers, it's on with the recycling process and with the buyback center. We, in looking at the numbers of along with the beneficiaries, a buyback center at most can only provide for 15 jobs per center. That's permanent jobs. In terms of what they receive, if their volumes go higher, then they can employ more. But you know what I'm advocating is that we go the next step, which is a value add, which means more money, which means more processing, which means more jobs in the future. So I think I've covered Honorable Skosana, Baba. I think I've covered your questions. That's fine. If I can move on to the questions of Honorable Morgan. If we look at the Articles of Association, and I've looked at these Articles of Association ever since I joined WCAPAC, the Articles of Association, when it comes down to the makeup of the board, there were members, and those members were COSATU, the Plastic Federation, the Plastic Recyclers Association, and the like, and the Institute of Waste Management. Okay, then they decided, in their infinite wisdom, to have an industry category and a labor category, which to me is already starting a fun fight.
And
to separate.
And it's got no place in companies.
Right.
Those aren't bargaining chambers and things like that, but not in companies.
So with that, industry put forward their directors and labor put forward their directors. Okay. And if you read further into those articles, Mr. Chairman, I'll make sure you get an electronic copy of those articles. If we look further into those articles, when it comes down to issues that need to go to a vote, it stipulates that industry has one vote as a category, labor has one vote as a category, and if there's a stalemate, the chair doesn't have a casting vote, it then goes to arbitration directly. Then there was an agreement and a letter written which allowed the Department of Environmental Affairs a vote on the board, which then would break the deadlock. But then they never operated in terms of the one vote each and the department having a vote which could vote either way. They then voted as who is present. If there are five people from industry, it's five. If there are two people from labor, it's two. And then they acted in that manner. However, when it got to the point of the allegations against board members and their suspension, they then reverted back to this one and one and arbitration. And went to the point of saying that they will not allow the board to continue with the process of testing the allegations that came out in the forensic audit against the two board members. Because it is not the board's position to do that in terms of the articles. It is the category from which those two members come from. It's responsibility to deal with that. If, and I must mention, out of the four industry representatives on the board, the one industry representative was actually in favor of testing the allegations, but it was going to be a 3-1 vote in that category. And there was advice given by there was legal advice sought, and that they could then, as a minority in that group, acting in good faith and within the confines of the law, then challenge and ask for relief from the court to be able to change that decision from that category. It didn't get to that stage. And the board's chair was eventually advised that in terms of the Articles of Association, the board cannot act against those members, and he legally will have to then invite them back onto the board, which did take place. Honorable Morgan, I'm trying to get as much detail to you as possible without having the document in front of me. I thought I had it in my pack, but I left it at the office. But I will make that document available to the committee through you, Mr. Chairman. In terms of the impacts on people's lives, Honorable Morgan, I know there's been rumor that there are buyback centers that are standing there, not in use. I must say that when I joined We Save Back, that certainly was the case. We are regional. That is the major part of the problem. We have expanded our team to ensure that we're able to get to all the buyback centers in all the provinces. So that has changed for the better, which is creating more jobs. It's assisting the guys to make some more money, and it's allowing those buyback centers to be more sustainable. In the past, what used to happen, a building was built, it was handed over to the beneficiary, and everybody sat in the office in Joburg. Employees used to walk into the offices with three newspapers under their arms. If you're walking into my office with three newspapers under your arm, you're going to be questioned. Because what are you there to do? Are you there to read the newspaper? Are you there to deliver to the people that are the poorest of the poor in this country? So those changes have taken place. We are receiving statistics. When I arrived at We Save Back, there was only one project that provided statistics, which was a gated community, Bluegill, was the only one. Now we're getting statistics from all our buyback centers on how much waste is being collected, how much waste is being sold, how many people are employed, how many people are permanently employed, casually employed, how many other people are coming to the centers to utilize them in order to put food on their table. So those stats are coming in. And, you know, I can provide reports of those stats that are coming in on a more regular basis than they used to in the past. So there has been change there. In terms of the cleanups, Honorable Morgan, you mentioned that, you know, a two-hour cleanup with a politician running around, that type of thing, is good for the newspaper headlines. That has become more sustainable now because we're looking at the situation of a proper cleanup where people are educated about it. The bags that are collected of that waste are separated, and they do go to recycling centers. And what is not recyclable then goes to a permitted landfill. And I must stress that it goes to a permitted landfill. If there isn't a permitted landfill in that area, we lay a complaint with that municipality and then bear the cost of taking that waste to a properly permitted landfill, so we're not exacerbating the problems that they have to begin with. In terms of, I think I've covered the buyback centers that were mentioned that were not operational. In terms of the job creation, you know, I've covered that. Yes, moving forward, as I'd mentioned in my presentation, we're looking at materials recovery plants. That is where you are employing people, a larger number of people. As I said, a buyback center can only sustain 15 permanent jobs, 30 casual jobs, whereas a materials recovery center can also then carry on with being able to create upwards of 150 jobs at one of those material recovery centers. So that is where, you know, my opinion, we need to move to. I've been part of waste management since 1996 in South Africa, so I'm well aware of where the jobs are within waste management. And then if you look at going further to that, you know, these economic nodes that I talk about, these that we need to establish in order to create jobs at home and have manufacturing of actually products from the recyclables closer to home, I think it's going to create not only more jobs, but it's going to create other smaller SMMEs that can then feed off those manufacturing plants. So, have had, you know, our hurdles in terms of what was allowed in terms of the criteria, what I can give a beneficiary and what I cannot. And there's always been a push from management side to go beyond what was approved by the board, but to get to the stage where we can provide something that's substantial in order to make a difference in people's lives. So that's where I believe that the job creation is. If I look at, I think I've covered your questions, Honorable Morgan. If I look at the questions of Ms. Wu Bing, that's Ms. Bing, I think this is for the Department of Environmental Affairs. And then Ms. Tsotsetsi, in terms of the board chairman is actually a member of CEPAL, and he had contacted me and advised me that he would not be available. The chair has expressed his opinions on the chair not being available, but he had put it down to the fact that they were busy with labor negotiations in the Tegwini area, and that's the only word that I've got from the board chair on why he's not able to be with us today. The Honorable Dr. Huang, in terms of the 4.1 million mentioned in the financials, that was money that had been paid across to SARS. And because we are deregistered, we could not claim that money back. That money, in 2 months ago, of that 4.1, taking into consideration the penalties by SARS, we have been able to recover 3.3 of that 4.1 million. That was something that I found out about and wanted to know why we were not registered and pursued, and eventually then got somebody, an expert, to go after that money to re-register us and also then go after that money and recover that money from SARS. So we have received 3.3 million of that back. In terms of the bonuses, if you look at the contracts of WEC Bag bonus employees, it's stipulated in the contracts that the employees are entitled, because they don't get 13 checks. From what was explained to me from inception of the company, that they were entitled to a bonus based on completion of an assessment, which is your basic scorecard, and that was for the previous year, and it was calculated at the amounts that reflect on in the financials. In terms of the consultants and consultants' fees, it, Mr. Chair, it varied with the different employees based on their performance.
And did each one get a bonus?
From my recollection, that's correct.
Actually, just complete malpractice.
Everyone
gets a bonus. It's unbelievable. Bonuses are for excellence, at the very least.
In terms of the consulting fees, the consulting fees are basically at WEC Bag, they design fees and the like that need to be done for buyback centers and for other facilities that we assist. For example, if we have facilities that we are assisting in terms of the necessity for a shed, ablution facilities and the like, that tender processes and that all that documentation then gets has been prepared by consultants in the past. We now have all that documentation. As I say, you know, when I walked into the WEC Bag CEO's office, there was no documentation in any shelf or in any file. So it was basically a start from scratch, new designs for different facilities and the like. In order to be able to provide the contractors with the necessary documentation in terms of tenders and procuring of services with WEC Bag. So that consultants have been utilized for that. In terms of the school's education program, I think I had covered that when I was answering the questions earlier, in terms of what exactly that program is and how many people it's reaching. So I think I think I've covered Mr. Dr. Huang, Honorable Huang's questions in that. In the strategic plan, sir. The business plan. If you could please repeat that question. I might have lost you somewhere, Mr.
Because in your presentation, you tell the committee, you must submit to your business plan because it's the department give the financial, it's the delay because you not complete your business plan. This committee very interesting can get your copy for your business plan. Thank you.
Yeah, I can make a copy of the business plan available to you, Mr. Chairman. In terms of the business plan for this financial year, it was submitted for the first draft of that business plan was submitted on time in August of last year. So it was submitted then. It's been going back and forth, and because of the turbulence within the board, it's been knocked around a bit. But it is with the department, and it was finally given to the final draft of that business plan was given to the department in December, which is, in my opinion, unacceptable. But it was finally given to the department on the 31st of January, should I say, not December.
I just like to know this business plan is came from your consultant.
Hang on, just look here. That means you've still got a chairperson. So what you're doing is now is having a tete-a-tete. You know what the procedure is. If there's really questions to be followed up, I give you chances later to do so. Let him just finish. Continue.
I think the rest of the questions, Mr. Chair, will be answered by the department.
Okay.
Thank you. Chair, honourable members, I hope to respond to all the questions, but I am going to ask my colleague, the Chief Director for Waste Management, to just add where I might miss or where more clarity is required. I'm not going to respond to the questions in the order that they were asked, but trying to address all the issues in terms of the sequence, in terms of what is a logical sequence. I think firstly we must debunk the myth that the department has established the company. The company, and my legal terminology might not be correct, in layman's term, my understanding is that the company was established as a result of a deal maker during the plastic bag regulations process. So there was a net lag facilitated discussion and net lag then facilitated this memorandum of agreement in order to withdraw the opposition to the plastic bag regulations being formed. And that memorandum of agreement then said that a Section 21 company must be established in order to do the following things. That was the objective: support the expansion of collector networks, establish rural SMMEs and create additional capacities within NGOs to do recycling. Through the expansion of the collector section and building of SMEs, the section company was to create job opportunities and decent work. At that point in time, it was estimated that between 1,900 and 3,800 jobs could be created, and that they also were supposed to be working with the sector education and training authorities to address and improve skills. The MOA further then indicated that this company and the operations of this company must be solely funded by government. There is no direct link between the levy and the funds. The levy going into totally like all taxes into the fiscus. We motivate based on deliverables and based on cost for an apportionment or a grant from the total fiscus, and that is where the funding comes from. So I think that is just also important. What is important in terms of the oversight? We do not legally have oversight of the board because it's a Section 21 company. That Section 21 company is managed through the Companies Act and directly linked to the Articles of Association which established that regime. What our oversight or our management function is in terms of the memorandum of agreement of how do we provide funds to implement the business plan. So we get a business plan from the company. That business plan say in order for them to do X, Y, and Z, they need this money. We then transfer the money with Treasury approval, and I think Treasury also towards the middle of last year started questioning these transfers. And we need to, in terms of the MOA, satisfy ourselves of a couple of criteria. And I mean, we can avail you with that MOA before we transfer the funds against the business plan. So we are not involved in the financial statements per se. If I may, we deal with the business plan.
But then how are you taking the decision to disband them?
We're not. That's why I'm going to get to the way how we got where we are right now, Chair. So that is the process that has been followed. So we believe that the original intention and the reason for it, specifically because we are not yet at the waste management industry plan for this. We don't have that in place yet. It's where we are moving to. These are still valid objectives. It takes the service to the people. It creates jobs, etc. So there is the objectives are still valid and should be honored. What we then did in our review is to say what justify our further payment to this. So we've expressed concerns about the trend. We then requested in a letter that there should be severe cost-cutting measures and that there should be a closer scrutiny of expenditure because the accounting officer, the DG, cannot with a clear conscience disburse any further funds. And that is the only thing that we have control over, Chair, is whether we disburse further funds or not, whether we provide further funds or not. What the decision of the accounting officers after reading all of this and the risks and the liabilities, etc., is that she cannot, the risks of availing any further funds are too great. If we don't avail any further funds, the company, there is no other source of income, will go bankrupt. We have 17 employees at least that we know of that will lose their jobs. We still feel good objectives that the company cannot be exercised. So with that in mind, we then said, what are the options forward? The options forward was basically either fix the Articles of Association and stay with the Section 21 company, then we do not fix this whole contradictions between the Company Act, the PFMA, when does the Company Act apply, when does the PFMA apply, all of those things are then not addressed. We also still have, for a relatively small company, the administrative costs associated just simply with accommodation, with travel, all of those things make the cost effectiveness a question. The second option was then to change the format of the company from a Section 21 company to a public entity in terms of the PFMA. Now, there's a couple of consequences associated with that. The first one up front is you would know that there is a general investigation or review of the public entities because specifically the small public entities, the fact that you have to remunerate the board, that there's costs associated with audit committing and the whole administration of especially a small public entity make it although far more transparent and the accounting than the Section 21 company from a public finance perspective is costly, so you don't have cost effectiveness. The third, and I must just mention that even if that was the chosen or preferred option, the company needs to wind up before you can translate it into a public entity. The third option is to look at what would the possibilities, and I think here we've looked very carefully at what it is that we are already doing, and we've compared very strongly to the functions that we are, for example, exercising in our SRPP program and the Expanded Public Works program, where we have strong regional presence and where the administration cost in terms of project delivery, job delivery, real benefit to the people on the ground versus what the administration cost for us is 15 to 85%, and we are constantly, every year we're reducing that 15%. Our aim for this year is to have it 11% of the administration and the rest going straight to the communities and to the beneficiaries of the impact. In Buyisa back for the past year, that was 59% in January, with a further 6 million committed to the end of the year. And in public entities, especially small public entities, that ratio is also big. So what we are saying is that we believe that absorbing the functions into the department through a transitional process, and we need to think about how to do it better, how do we empower municipalities to take over this function, similar to what we're doing in all the working for programs, for example, and some of the SRPP programs, is a way of considering it. What we then said is, how do you get to winding up? From our perspective, we are saying we're not giving you any more money. So the company, if I now move into the company, has three options. Their three options is either find your own source of funding or become bankrupt. Secondly, to wind up voluntarily. Or thirdly, to wind up through a court order. And we've established that the best way and the interest of all is a voluntary process, because then the department can assist in terms of, there is no obligation on us to do this. But we have made the offer to say that let's appoint this company's experts to do the winding up process, so that we know exactly what all the liabilities are, what all the assets are, what the commitments are, and how we can take all of that forward, including the outstanding items. I think, Chair, it is for us difficult to say in terms of how do we follow through on the things that happened in the board, but it's certainly something that we're going to take the advice of in terms of this outstanding disciplinary matters, etc. What way can we legally be involved if we are appointed as the administrator during this transition? Then obviously we have more control than if not. So what we took to the board through the chairperson of the board, and I must make it clear that I agree 100% with the CEO here that there is big divisions in the board, and I personally don't think the board can in any means be seen as a functional board. All of our experiences with the other boards of our other entities, we don't have that.
Explaining is worries me, because the problem is this: if you're washing your hands, and I'm saying that in the nicest sense of the word, then whatever monies are there, we hear that 3 million was collected from SARS and so on. Whatever monies are there, it is surely the duty of government to make sure that money and the assets come back to government.
Yes. Now, Chair, that is why what our position was is that because we are a party to, winding up is our preferred option. Voluntary is the best way. But even if we have to go the drastic step of seeking the court order to make it happen, it would be in our interest if it happens that way. Because the Articles of Association establish, and the only like company in terms of that can take that over is us. So we say that we know that the money that we gave them can carry them until the end of June in terms of their commitments. we've already, and we must thank the CEO for that, all documents have been availed to us in terms of their contracts, in terms of their staff. So we know what it is that they are contractually committed to do. And I think that is why we agree with you 100% that the sooner all of this happened, the better. And this board resolution is for us a very critical point, because if you have a board resolution, that then gets registered. And I think the entire process of winding up then unfolds. But while that winding up happening, this is where this expert company that have both financial company law and auditing capabilities would assist us and management in order to transition this in a way that would make sense, that is transparent, that is efficient, and make sure that the money that needs to be used for certain things are used for those.
What checks and balances are we putting in place that the thing doesn't get looted? And I say again that in the kindest way. In other words, there's a company sitting there.
Yes.
It's not being run.
Yeah.
There's a lot of assets involved. They never had an asset register. There's now an asset register.
Mm-hmm.
How do we make sure that we can secure all that, and that some person is not going to start selling off the equipment in Pitsonavater and wherever they've got these recycling centers? So, you know, what steps or what are we going to put in place to avoid that?
Yeah, I'll put a lawyer on to just respond to that.
Chair, I haven't done that type of law for a long time, but essentially what happens is once that winding up process takes place, the liquidators get a hold of all those assets. They also look at disposals, if that's the correct term, if I recollect correctly, for the past 2 years. So, for example, if there's going to be a liquidation, they take all asset disposition for the past 2 years and then look at those. It's a similar situation.
You know, and I know, and I've done many of these, and you've done some of them certainly as well. The problem is, it's fine to say that they're going to look back at all the last 2 years. The problem is, once those things have been taken and they've been sold to the next person and the next person, then you don't get them back. So what I'm saying is, between you and the CEO, which clearly has the best interest of our country in mind in the way he's presented himself, between you need to make sure that there are steps in place to make sure that nothing untoward is going to happen with any of those things.
Absolutely, Chair, and I think that is why we say that the department needs to manage this service provider, so that we can make sure, you know, you have this very thorough process that we followed with the transfer of the national resource management to our department, because we are inheriting both the liabilities, the risks, and the assets. So we need to follow the money to see what did this money buy over this past 5 years, where are those things which has been transferred, because remember, some of these assets have been transferred to municipalities.
I think you must.
So we have a very detailed process.
All these documents that you said you're going to give us, I think that plus a report on these issues needs to be given to us very urgently. What are the assets that you found? What are the liabilities? I mean, I don't even, you know, I'm very worried to hear. Clearly, we have to take over the liabilities, but, you know, who knows what they are?
Yeah.
So I think you need to give us a very thorough report on after you leave here, getting all those documents that we said we're going to get, plus then giving us a report and saying, this is what we found. These are the assets that exist. These are the liabilities that exist. This is what we're going to do in the interim. And, you know, once there's a winding up, clearly the liquidator will take it from there.
Mm.
And according to the Articles of Association, this is the procedures, how you deal with those assets, what's ever left over after the liquidation.
Yeah.
So we have a whole picture.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we did do, as the CEO was also alluded, a real detailed analysis of the Articles of Association. And it is also short on some of this guidance that in terms of the Act it should provide. For example, there is no real provision in terms of winding up, so we're going to have to go back to the Companies Act in terms of some of those things. So we are busy with that very, very detailed
process. Will help you to give a report like that to
us,
and it must be like yesterday. This is not something that will come gradually during the course of the year. This is a matter of urgency, okay?
Yeah, Chair, I think we just need to have the board resolution. We can tell you what homework we've done.
I think this committee's guidance is simple. If there is no board resolution, then you must take whatever steps need to be taken. You, the department. And the best will probably be a liquidation process then that's compulsory. In that process, of course, these liquidators need to be clear. These directors need to be clear that all their mishaps and all the things that they've done incorrectly are then going to come out as well.
Mm-hmm.
So they must be quite clear on this.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm saying, you see, you can pussyfoot around to a certain degree. But now that you've made your decision and stuff, you must stop pussyfooting, because all that's going to happen is you're going to come back here and we're going to fight with you like hell to tell you why didn't you look after government's assets. I know that's what's going to happen. That's why I'm saying to you, I want you guys to proper go and look at this thing and properly put in the report, these are the steps we're going to take. This is how we're going to secure the assets. Because otherwise we're going to, they're not here next time. Next time there's just going to be a fight with you, the department. I don't want to have a fight with the department. Okay? When you hear the history of this thing, it is just the kind of most, it's the kind of way that one doesn't govern. Particularly not through NEDLAC. And I say that with respect, because I just think that agreements like this is made in NEDLAC is just very problematic, as has been proved here today, through how this thing unfolded from there on. Because it's not done in a department. Therefore, the department doesn't take responsibility for what's going on and so on. But then a department is given the responsibility to actually give the money. So it's very problematic dealing with matters like this. I really find it absolutely unacceptable. But the problem is now, you need to now cover yourselves as a department. That someone doesn't come back to you and say, but why didn't you, why were you negligent here, not dealing with this thing properly, okay? So I think we need that report quickly and so on, and I think you've got the support of all the parties here, that if you then have to take drastic steps yourself, if they're going to pussyfoot with it and so on, then we must move in. What are the names of the two people that were implicated? Give me the names. Don't hesitate and boom and ah. Just give me the names. They're in that report. We're going to get the report in any case. I want to know.
Mr. Chair, The names mentioned with allegations in the forensic report, David Hughes of the Plastic Federation and Doe Sane of the Plastic Federation.
Good. I hope the media heard that. I deliberately asked the question so that we know who these people are, who the industry, who the business sect part. According to the articles, you can only take disciplinary steps through the unit that you belong to, through the business part. The business part has refused to take steps against these two people and have put them back on the board, despite them being mentioned in this. So I'd like the media to be aware of that. There is a forensic report. It will be made available to us and be dealt with accordingly. Of course, at this stage, the word alleged is very much the word that must be used.
Please,
it's a forensic report.
Please, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate it.
The point is, it's a report that's been given and people have been implicated. And four companies have also been implicated and these two directors have been implicated. The problem with the directors is that this board of directors then further, after suspending them, then took the action to bring them back because of the articles and are refusing to take steps against them. That's the point. Now, I mean, one of the things I want, that's why I want the report from the police, how far the report is, because there is a duty in the legislation on corruption, a duty to report matters above 100,000. Now, I want to see how far that duty goes in terms of directors who are then not prepared to take action against people that are falling in their kind of sphere, according to their articles of association, and not taking action against them. Okay? So I've got no problem. I need to get that report here very quickly. If any of the media want the forensic report, you can then please access it through the committee secretary. But this is unacceptable that these things are being hidden by this company while they are using government money every year. Completely unacceptable. And on this, we have the support of all the political parties in this committee. They've expressed themselves very strongly on the unacceptable behavior. As I say, these are allegations. The only way you take allegations and you then either find that they're not allegations anymore or that there is some substance to it is by dealing with the issue. The board members have refused to deal with this issue. And this is government money. Totally unacceptable. So I want to know that that there is this forensic report. I want it to be absolutely known, and I want exactly not just us in Parliament, but hopefully also the business community to put pressure on people like this to do their job properly. You know, we hear there's corruption, no one does anything about corruption. Here's a report alleging that there are problems, which still have to be proved, but that directors of a company are refusing to do something is totally and utterly unacceptable. I can just say that. Totally and utterly unacceptable. So please get those reports to us very quickly.
If I may then just also ask the Chief Director to respond specifically to some of the issues raised by Honourable Morgan about the way forward and how the Waste Management Act influenced
okay,
the way
quickly.
Forward.
Let's go quickly. Wind this up. I think we're all on one voice here.
Thank
so
you,
we
Chair.
Don't have to belabor anymore.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, I would like to, Ms. McCourt has indicated, I'm not as a Corbin, I'm the Chief Director for Waste and Pollution Management within the department. Now, we interact a lot with the user at the operational level. The rest of the governance issues get managed by my other colleagues. But just in terms of our experience with the entity, the structure, the company, I would like to state that we have recognized that there's a lot of potential for BOYISA to have the on-the-ground impact and creating a lot more jobs, as I think has been expressed here by the various members of the committee. In fact, when this process that Ms. McCourt has alluded to in terms of winding up, this comes in the midst of us, the department, and the company working on a strategic plan, which, as the CEO indicated, never actually got to be thoroughly engaged by the board. And as much as we are a member of the board, in fact, one of my directors sits on the board of BOYISA, but the fact of the matter is that we could never make decisions on our own. So it didn't matter how much we liked the strategic plan, we could never go it alone in terms of making the decisions. So we were in that process of having a strategic plan for the company that, first of all, widens the scope of what BOYISA does. Secondly, to make sure that the regional intentions of the plastic bag regulations are fully implemented. Thirdly, to make sure that with the coming into effect of the Waste Act, that we have a company that now has a plan that responds to all of the requirements of the new Waste Management Act, and also be able to make reference to how we then synergize or how we align the work of BOYISA with the rest of the responsibilities of the municipalities that come with the Waste Act. Lastly, also we were looking at making sure that there's much more awareness, although I think we tried to achieve some of that through the partnership with Indalo, Indalo Yetu, and then also building up SMMEs. But as I've indicated, the conflict within the board was quite a problem in terms of the day-to-day operations at BOYISA. In fact, I think that I can mention from my experience that when the results of the forensic audit came out, all hell just broke loose within the board. There were literally very few decisions that were made, and as you know, the CEO then can't implement a whole lot of things if the board can never decide on anything. In fact, even the issue of regional presence, I know that Chile just alluded to it. I'm aware that it is a proposal that was made quite a while ago. The board was toing and froing around it when the proposal was made to have regional presence. It eventually, that came through. Just to touch on the issue of the Articles of Association, there was a point where there was a meeting between Buyisa Ibeg, the DG of the department, and some of us that have worked with Buyisa to, in fact, look at whether we couldn't amend the Articles of Association to fix the constitution of the board. That was an earlier suggestion that came way before this winding up process. And as Ms. McCourt has indicated, the recent events then overtook all of that, and that's why we are where we are today. In terms of the process forward, I think that Ms. McCourt has alluded to the appointment or the proposal or the offer, as she puts it, of the department to appoint a service provider to run or help us with the winding up. As I've indicated, one of the things that have to be looked at, and it can't, it has to be done alongside the winding up process, is to say, what was the original intention of Buyisa? And look at that and bring in the other context, which is the Waste Management Act and what it requires in terms of how we deal with the various waste streams. There's a lot of instruments within the Waste Act that guide us in terms of how we deal with different waste streams. Now, what we have to do is to say that this waste stream that Buyisa Ibeg was looking at, what are the instruments within the Waste Act that will effectively address the management of that waste stream? And then we have to, as I've indicated, look at how do we then bring in municipalities into that loop and come up with a model that is going to address all of those issues, including the fact that at the end of the day, plastic bags or any of the other streams that we had intended to bring into the workings of Buyisa, these things are produced by industry. We have a producer responsibility clause in the Waste Act. We have clauses that deal with industry waste management plans. And whilst I'm on that point, I think we need to bear in mind that this industry that we're dealing with here is not a clean industry. I think that's very clear. Now, the way that the Waste Act works is that there are your sort of command and control provisions in the Waste Act, like your licensing. And we do this, for example, when we permit storage facilities, for instance, you have to get a license. But then there are activities that are related to waste management where, if you like, the legislation is much more relaxed. And, for example, this is where we would use things like your industry waste management plans. Now, the minister has issued...
Can I suggest that we have this discussion at a later stage?
That's fine.
Now going into... I mean, I know you've been asked the question, but I think we didn't want all that detail.
Okay.
There has to be a separate discussion on this.
Okay.
You know, how are we going to deal with this issue and so on. I think
thank you.
See
thank you, Chair. I think the last...
One of the issues I've listed for our workshop in July is the whole issue of waste as well. So, please.
Thank you very much, sir. I think the last thing I would like to just echo is to say that I think the CEO has to be commended for the work that he has done under very, very difficult circumstances of not being able to get prompt guidance from his board. Thank you. And we look forward to working with the CEO, the rest of the DIA team, and the service provider in crafting the way forward. Thank you, sir.
Okay. I think that you have the agreement of this committee that the steps that are being taken to wind up this company are long overdue. We are suggesting that if this does not happen voluntarily, the department, and very soon, the department has made the steps to make it happen. Then we've asked you to make sure when you draft the report for us that you're making sure that you're securing all government's assets and so on in this regard, and it's set out in that plan. Then we also want all the documentation that we've been promised, particularly I urgently want the financial audit. You can give that before everything else. Then we urgently also need a report from SARS, not SARS, investigation is that's been referred to them. And so on. I also think that this whole discussion around the waste issue and the alternatives around this, I think we need some further discussions on that matter. I think you guys should start preparing yourself to engage the committee and let us know when you're ready. It's one thing deciding this must go now, but then one has to decide what to do with those assets, how it's going forward, and then if it's easy to say it should be local government's job, but are they going to do it, for example, et cetera, et cetera. So I think all those steps are there. I just also want to make sure that the department must make sure that because this company was created in such a different way, that you have all the role players on board that you need for what you're doing. I think that's very important. You know, the last thing you want to, you go through this process and suddenly then someone gets up and says, but, you know, we were never known in this thing, and et cetera, et cetera, which is probably likely to happen because these people on the board now are going to use whatever pressure they can to make sure to create some problems. Then I do expect, I don't care who it is, but I do expect that the department take forward the kind of the forensic report to its logical conclusion. See, although you haven't got the direct responsibility, you hand the money over. Here, a report tells you that someone has done something wrong with the money. So you do have the responsibility to follow those things up, which are two things. Firstly, the criminal side of things, and we want a report there. But the second thing is there's the possibility of looking at the Companies Act and seeing to what extent there should be action taken against these directors. Okay? Anything else that anyone from the committee wants to add we should be doing? We happy? Lovely. Everyone happy? Good. I think we've got everyone's support. Huh? Coffee outside. I think it's a good time for coffee. After this, you need something much stronger than coffee. Coffee will be a very down. CEO, I don't want to laud you too much like the department has done, because all I see is a mess. And I take it from what you've explained to us, when I look at the natural pattern of your report, it does seem that after you were appointed, things started changing. So insofar as the report shows that, I would, from behalf of the committee, want to thank you for whatever has been done. I too know that, it's difficult, obviously, it's easier to understand in government how things work, because you give a order and someone must do it. Obviously, it's slightly different in a company, because your equivalent of the company, the minister, has authority to do things in the department, but you and the staff must then do things, whereas the CEO has difficulties, of course, to do things if their board is not operational. So I understand that, and insofar as that mitigates against what state the company is in, we understand that. But whatever you guys have done, we thank you for the work. If this is going to be wound up, I hope it's wound up tomorrow, and we will never see a need to listen to a report like this again. Okay. Let's adjourn for 5 minutes. You can go to small places. You can go and drink that coffee. You can go and look for something stronger. The bar is somewhere on that side of Parliament. 5 minutes, and then we'll do the last entity. Yay, yay, yay. What a mess. finish this morning. I don't want to sit this afternoon. Why are you bringing your frustrations here to work? Huh? You like Dr. Abrams? All right. We now have another company. This is the partners of its companies. Indalo Yetu. You should. I don't think the report was given in the package. Do all of you have the reports now?
Yeah.
Do we have a hand of that?
Okay.
It's a nice. It's obviously a company with a lot of money. It's got nice reports. It's got nice, colorful things. Who's the CEO or the chair or the, are they there? Oh, smart people.
We're in
there,
this corner.
Who's what? Who's the chair? Who's the director? Who's what? Tell me who you are before I say hello to you.
I'm Zandile Nzalo. I'm the acting chairperson, and June Joseph is our CEO.
Okay.
And Kayum Benny is our head of finance and admin.
Lovely. Good morning. Welcome. And you can take about 15 to 20 minutes to just give the input, and then the committee will engage with you.
Thank you very much, honorable members. It's a pleasure for us to present our strategy and also to give you an update of...
And may I just mention and interrupt you rudely to say that in the last 2 days, you're the only director that's attended from all the entities. So thank you very much. Congratulations.
Thank you. If I may recap on our formation, we are actually a WSSD legacy program, and we are aimed at creating an eco-conscious society by way of creating awareness and also through the creation of sustainable jobs and skills development in the green sector. I have been on this board of trustees since inception, and I must say that we've come a long way. We have so far, since inception, received unqualified reports or unqualified audits.
Hey, that's a good thing.
Year in, and to date we can stand firm in saying that we are fully PFMA compliant. We've had, you know, various challenges throughout our journey, but to this day we can also then boast of having made some amazing strides in the recent years, more especially since the appointment of our CEO. I would like then to hand over to our CEO, June Joseph Langer. She'll take us through our strategic plan and also give a status of where we are in terms of progress made to date as well as the way forward. Thank you.
Can I just say you've already pressed all the right buttons. She's going to have a good reception. Why don't you tell me unqualified report? Why don't you say that? I'm smiling. Well, we hear the bonuses. Bonuses always controversial. Doesn't matter how good you are. Okay, go ahead, CEO.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. Honourable Morgan, I'm glad you're here. I wanted to tell you, well, we don't have the word cleanup anywhere in the presentation. So I hope you won't give it to us in the neck. Okay. If we can move. As the chairperson has indicated, Indalo Yetu is a legacy program of the World Summit on Sustainable Development that was hosted quite successfully by South Africa. It was established as a trust and founded by Department of Environment Affairs and WESA. It works with the levels of government, all three levels of government, as well as creates a bridge between government and civil society and business across the departmental mandates. As you know, the environment sector has a range of issues that are dealt with by different departments. Indalo Yetu works with all of those various departments and is able to, empowered to work with them without having departmental scope issues as the National Environment Agency. In our approach, we deal with all of the five sectoral issues: water, energy, waste, pollution, biodiversity. We don't deal with climate change as a standalone, but as a cross-cutting issue, because we think interventions in all of these five areas would help towards adaptation and mitigation. In the purple blocks, the approach to our work, to start with the economic and social factors, we deal with sustainability in its three components, environment, economic, and social factors, and that's the approach to all our implementation. In the eco-labeling, we look at the support systems that need to be put in place for business, because South Africa is not Europe and our industry is not yet geared up to that level. So rather than look at who doesn't qualify, is look at how do we capacitate business and industry to comply with cleaner eco-labeling and cleaner production. We also look at the entire product life cycle in eco-labeling, so not just the product on the shelf, but from its origination. Next slide. Chair, you may know that when we were created and in our trust funding documents, we had these two broad mandates, and I think that's probably what Honourable Morgan refers to, this broad thing called education and awareness, which we did in a scattered way and doing too many little things, which were called awareness, and implementing the second mandate, which is the eco-endorsement program.
Just explain to me, I'm a new boy on the block.
Okay.
What does it mean that you're a trust?
We're a not-for-profit trust, governed by a trust deed, having a board of trustees that are appointed and approved by the Wildlife Environment Society of South Africa and the department.
By both.
It was during the time of its inception, Chair, it was established to really create that link or that bridge between society and government and business. The eco-endorsement program is particularly a business-focused program. The education and awareness is really your outreach with civil society, NGOs.
Okay, now I'll ask some questions just now. Go on.
Okay. The rationale for our existence, people and planet are in trouble. I think that is well known, the impacts of climate change resulting in increased drought incidents and extreme weather, reduced food production, coastal cities, and the fact that environmental degradation continues to impact on human health and biodiversity, and in particular poorer communities or less resourced communities are more vulnerable. In all of this, and I think even by this committee chair, there's a constant call for awareness and the acknowledgement that education and awareness is a key enabler for climate action and for more responsible environment practice, both by individuals, communities, society, as well as business. We've had a remake in some senses, Chair, in that we had to acknowledge we were doing too many awareness activities and cleanups and planting trees in a school here and there, and had to look at how do we realign the organization as, well, one, because we have a very small component of funding from the department, but two, because I think we would achieve greater social transformation and behavior change through actual implementation. So in effect, we are operating as an implementing agency, and we also raise funds from other organizations to support interventions in the environment which support are aligned with national priorities. Next slide. In this remake, we looked at what is the key opportunity that exists here. regularly the environment sector is seen as the Cinderella sector, as those tree-hugging greenies, and that we don't really contribute to national priorities. So in our examination of what we should be doing, we thought maybe we need, or the opportunity is here, to shake the Cinderella sector status that we have and really look at how the environment sector can contribute to national priorities. And in fact, the environment sector has a unique opportunity, especially in this climate-changing environment, to create new jobs through restoration, rehabilitation, adaptation efforts at climate change responses. It also has the opportunity to create wealth through establishing new enterprises, and I will say in both low and high-end sectors. So, for instance, the enterprises you create in waste are equally as valuable to the people they empower as those people who go and set up solar farms and find or generate cleaner forms of energy. There is also an opportunity in addressing national priorities to develop new skill sets. So, for instance, there's a whole range of energy efficiency services which are needed by South Africa where you have actually scarce skills. In our implementation, we really have had to say, let us implement programs which demonstrate the ability to contribute to development, and I will say very carefully, development that is in balance with the planet, because we do use the development argument to actually interact harmfully with the environment in some cases. And that we would achieve this mandate of awareness through actually doing. Next slide. So our realignment response of the organization has been, yes, we would create this eco-conscious society through increased awareness, but also look at how we can generate incomes and develop skills that are in these scarce skill sectors for a green economy and towards climate change responses.
Why is that butterfly jumping around like that?
It's ready for action, Tim.
I like that butterfly. I like it. I think my daughter will like a butterfly like it.
Okay, so you will see that in our programmatic focus, we actually have taken the vision, the realigned vision, and interpreted them into programs, actual implementation programs that also respond to the national priorities. We have the Green Skills Strategic Program focus, and the implementations there are a Youth Energy Auditor Program, where we're actually training youth, we're training unemployed graduates, electrical engineering graduates, as energy auditors, because currently there is a shortage of these skills. We also took a range of flagship programs that women in the environment are involved in and developed a set of training around these to assist these women to grow their businesses and take them to upscale levels. In the next programmatic focus area is the green jobs and enterprise development, and our significant intervention there is the EcoTowns program. It's a local government support program with an enterprise development and job creation focus, which I'll elaborate on in detail. The Eco-Endorsement program, we continue to implement that. We were established with a mandate to implement the National Eco-Labeling program, and we continue to do that. And the outreach and awareness programs, which also are part of our mandate, but which we're doing through a range of more consolidated interventions. In particular, our focus for this year being the COP17 year, as well as the year in which we will be gazetting the climate change policy, our focus is on climate awareness. Just to take you through the eco-endorsement program quickly, Why do we do it? It rewards good business practice and promotes competitiveness. There are businesses who want to market themselves as eco-friendly and green niche companies, and they should receive acknowledgement for their efforts. But also because it empowers consumers through identifying third-party verified eco-label. So we develop criteria, eco-criteria. We audit those products in terms of their environmental performance, and then we will award that eco-label.
Do you have a scientific component that you, I saw the other day, a pick and pay, like a bottle you got in Dali Yedos on it.
Yes.
How do you actually make sure that it is eco-friendly? I mean, how do you scientifically do that?
We have laboratories who are contracted to us, and we get those laboratories to actually test. So, for instance, with those green pick-and-pay chemicals, Chair, we've developed criteria which talk about the VOC content, the phosphate content, all of those things which are generally harmful to the environment. And we would test levels of that substance in the product, and should it be lower than the levels in the criteria, we would award the eco label. So essentially,
if your badge is there, I can use it.
Absolutely, it's a trusted label.
Okay. And just have a scandal, and then we'll have a problem. Okay, go ahead.
That's actually, Chair, I think you're right that integrity of the label is absolutely critical, and it's why it has taken so long to trial it, to get all of the systems in place for testing, etc. South Africa has a challenge around laboratory capacity, so it has taken a while to get that capacity in place. We're also collaborating with the United Nations Environment Programme eco-labeling capacity building to look to address some of those shortfalls or challenges that South Africa faces in terms of scientific testing capacity. And also because we do the eco-labeling because it does assist in promoting sustainable consumption and production. In terms of the pilot, we piloted the endorsement model and we trialed it several times, and eventually we did take it out to the market with the pick and pay green range of cleaning chemicals. That was a good pilot, Chair, because the product is quite authentic. We had to address some of the institutional issues which are being done now. And we have developed national minimum responsible tourism standards together with the Department of Tourism and the Tourism Grading Council. Tourism as a high growth sector as well as a high impact sector has quite a large carbon footprint, and we thought tourism was a good sector to prioritize in order to have some meaningful intervention. Also because lots of establishments are calling themselves eco-tourist destinations, and that needs to be tested against some criteria. However, Chair and members, the eco-labeling is not legislation. It's voluntary, so companies submit themselves to be audited. For this year, the strategic priorities for this area is to establish the advisory panel, because we do find that there are a range of scientific interventions in the area, and it's good to have some oversight from that, from the universities and the science community, as well as research that's constantly taking place in the scientific world. The built environment sector is the next sector that we will develop criteria for. It's also a high impact sector in terms of its carbon footprint. And you see all sorts of claims about, I think they call it eco cement or green cement or something like that. So we are developing criteria. We're working with the sector as well as the Department of Public Works and the Council for the Built Environment. The EcoTowns program, I promise to elaborate on that in more detail because this is really our flagship program, and I wanted to just elaborate on it in a bit more detail. But to start with, why would we be involved in a local government support program? Chair, often the budgets that are allocated to municipalities also treat the environment sector as a Cinderella sector. So whilst they're really at the coalface of delivery of services, waste management, ecosystem management receives very little percentage of the local government budget. Those are the challenges municipalities are faced with. Those are actual pictures from two of the towns, I think that's Mthatha and Butterworth, before we introduced the EcoTowns program, as well as the real greening contrast. So that is a leafy suburb in Johannesburg on your one side, and there is a township, I think that's Khayelitsha actually, on your, is that right, on your right side. In addition, you find, apart from the budget constraints that municipalities are faced with, you also have huge problems of unemployment, a great sense of community apathy, and even the deterioration of revenue collection in the municipalities. We conceptualize the national chapter of the UN-derived EcoTowns program, and we raised funding from the Social Responsibility Policy and Programs component, as well as the expanded public works program for the job creation and enterprise development components. What do we do in the EcoTowns? We provide municipal capacity support in particularly the areas of waste management and open space planning. And the idea is really to create sustainability-centered models of town management, where you get local municipalities who actually seriously prioritize environmental management and sustainability in the way that they manage their town. Again, responding to national priorities, as well as the fact that it's very hard to get people to take a better care of the environment when they're seriously resource-starved. So there is a job creation component, and we've made sure that these jobs specifically focus on environmental rehabilitation and restoration of ecosystems. That's just an example, Chair. I think probably members would know that KSV Municipality, Mthatha, is amongst one of the two renowned as the dirtiest towns. After the intervention and workshopping of the municipality to try and get them to buy into sustainability-centered town management, they've developed a 20-year vision. Last year, they developed a 20-year vision, which they articulated in this way, to say that a sustainable Mthatha would mean that when today's babies are 21, they will live in an Mthatha that has retained and enhanced its natural assets and resources, attracts investment, and creates good livelihoods. Thanks. Okay. The design of the EcoTowns program, these are some of the key deliverables that are implemented. We start with, though, the institutional issues or regulatory instruments of the municipality. So we first look at, does the municipality have an integrated waste management plan? Do they have an open space plan? If not, we assist them to develop that. Or if it's been long developed, we help them to review it and make sure that it's relevant and also responds to the new acts, the new National Waste Management Act, etc. We do provide street bins for waste collection as well as recycling bins to encourage waste separation. Also, you'll find that some of the enterprises are around waste management, composting facilities, etc. So those waste separation bins actually assist to sort out the waste and provide them to the enterprises to be able to run profitable activities. There's components of tree planting, ecosystem rehabilitation, and town beautification, the provision of street furniture as well. And then, Chair, two elements which are not seen traditionally as environment interventions, but which do really talk to the sustainability as well as just the functioning, the urban management of the town, and that is one, the development of gateways, which mark the town exits and entrances, which have had an amazing impact on just creating some sense of town pride and town ownership when you drive into a town and it says, welcome to Lady Brand or welcome to Tulamela. That's the one thing. And the second thing is the creation of market streets. Now this, whilst it helps to facilitate trade, it also helps to assist town movement, town flow, and the local enterprises. Because what you find with the current situation, or as we found them, there was hawking happening all over the street. There aren't dedicated market areas. You'll find that lots of dumping happens, lots of littering in the street happens, because if there is a bin, people can't get to it for the sake of people being crowded on the pavement trying to sell wares to generate an income. So we have created dedicated market streets for people to trade in, as well as to support those local enterprises that we would be establishing, like composting, as well as the waste repurposing, the crafters, etc. There is a complementary program to it, which is the creation of recreational parks or green parks in each of these municipalities, and that's not done by ourselves. It's done by a separate implementation agency, but it is quite integrally linked to the environmental sustainability of these towns. In terms of progress, Chair, I see the numbers are not there. I think it's 2,500 street bins that have been planted in these towns and 2,586 bins that have been placed to support waste separation. We have employed 2,894 previously unemployed persons, Chair, in what I will say are decent jobs. These are the one of the few EPWP programs that actually gives people a two-year contract. And I know there's debate about whether these are green jobs or not, but I think it's a decent job. It provides an income for people over a sustained period. And I think regardless of the color of the jobs, they're contributing to improving the lives of those people. Okay, that's just a picture demonstration of the actual gateway constructed where community people have been involved under the guidance of a construction implementer or contractor to build this gateway. It has rainwater harvesting components, it has landscaping, and as you can see, it is powered by solar power that looks like an antenna on top of the gateway. This has really, if we monitor local newspapers, there really is a new sense of pride that emerges amongst the citizens, amongst the town people.
I think this also they needed this because if you drive too fast past that,
you get to Lesotho.
You miss it.
Yes.
But now you can't miss it. There's a big.
And you end up in Lesotho, Chief. The bottom picture is the tree planting that has taken place in Kharankua Township, which was quite dry. Albi, I'm sure you'll be pleased. I think Albi comes from there. Thanks.
You recognize the difference?
I do.
Good.
Oh, good. Thank you, Albi. Thank you. Very right answer. Okay.
It is one of the saddest things that I don't understand. I mean, one understands that we can't build a beautiful big houses for everyone, but the one thing I never understand is that municipalities when they plant these things, don't at least plant trees.
Absolutely.
Beyond me, I just don't understand what you have to tell them to do something like it.
Yeah.
Because they just automatically, those little drab houses just become different. They, you know, they put a space and stuff. I don't know. I don't know how you engage municipalities to do these things if they don't just automatically see that that's their job.
So we're hoping that...
That's just my rant.
Yes.
You can go ahead.
We have had several discussions with COGTA, and COGTA is very keen on once the model is implemented or once the model has been completed, is looking at this as a model for all municipalities to follow sustainability-centered town management. Again, I think it is dependent on the kind of budget allocations they make to municipalities as well. Chair, we're finding that the interventions in these 10 towns also has had other positive impacts. So with the bush clearing which and removal, some of those are alien vegetation. With that removal, you're finding that crime hotspots are being cleared, and in fact it's actually having a positive impact on reducing crime in those towns. Oh, here are the bin numbers. I see they've gotten onto the slide. The picture at the bottom is the mayor of Mansopa handing over bins at the local shopping centers, bins for separation of waste and collection of waste, and that waste would now belong, the various waste streams would belong to those various enterprises that are being set up through this program. Okay, those are some of the 2,894 workers that have been employed on the EPWP two-year contract. I think that's Bushbuck Ridge where the Deputy Minister is, and I'm not sure which is the other site. Thanks. Some of the challenges. Okay. We do have sporadically labor issues coming up, Chair, and that's because of the ministerial determination for expanded public works program signed by the Minister of Labor. Previously, it used to not provide benefits of maternity leave and UIF. The ministerial determination has been reviewed and was passed, I think, about 2 or 3 months ago, where they actually do now make provisions for people to get benefits like UIF and maternity leave. We have some delays in permitting approvals, and I think all I need to say is we strongly believe in the separation of roles between municipal officials and service providers, and we don't think that they can be the same thing. So, Chair, we are a bit behind on our spending in the construction-related deliverables, partly because the planning time frames we gave for getting, for instance, a gateway an approval by the town planning department for a structure that needs to go up on the side of the road was a bit too ambitious. So we have reviewed those time frames. We also have delays in the approvals of those construction plans and approvals by the roads departments. The impact, Chair, in the first year of its implementation, we certainly have some visibly cleaner towns. I will admit that some of them were struggling to turn around for a range of issues, and I think the next year of implementation should show significant progress. But I think in about at least 6 of those towns, we have a real visible difference shown. 250 youth, some who are actually environmental science graduates, are now the awareness ambassadors employed in these programs and actually serve as quite an enthusiastic and skilled network for creating environmental awareness in these towns. share some of the tangible, measurable things of impact. Butterworth Municipality, which was the second municipality, or known as the second dirtiest municipality, has actually received the VUNA Award for being the most improved clean municipality. And Tulamela, that's Toyando and surrounds, has moved from 13th place in the greenest town competition to win second place in the provincial competition. There are, of course, the obvious one of 2,894 families with a monthly income and which they know they will get for a period of 2 years. And Chair, I think whilst we have challenges at these municipalities, sometimes with officials, there are some real mayors that are absolute champions. You generally find them in the less resourced municipalities where the mayors completely embrace the program, completely champion it, and make sure that they direct the officials to implement in line with the principles of the EcoTowns program. Our second programmatic area, skills development, our focus is on youth and women skills development, and in this programmatic area, our two core programs there are the Youth Energy Auditor Program, where we're growing the pool of scarce skills for energy auditors and energy saver advocates. Chair, the majority of these youth who are being trained in the program are actually unemployed electrical engineering graduates. We're also empowering women through the Women in Environment program. We've created 9 provincial forums which serve as platforms for exchange of best practice, where they share experiences as well as get workshopped on how to improve their businesses, how to market those businesses better, and how to grow those businesses. All of the criteria of these businesses is that they must be eradicating or addressing environmental threats in these areas that they're implemented. The Youth Energy Audit Program we're implementing in partnership with the Department of Environment Affairs, and we got some funding from the German government through GIZ, that's the German Technical Agency, and the National Youth Development Agency is providing entrepreneurship and life skills training. We have developed a National Building Energy Auditor Training Program, which will be a training program available through the construction CETA, and we've made the training material available to anybody who wishes to run a training program who has received accreditation. In Gauteng, we're implementing the Gauteng leg, and there are 33 unemployed electrical engineers being trained in that program. We have established the 9 provincial forum, I think I said that, and we've launched the national chapter, the National Women and Environment chapter, and linked it with the African Ministers of Women Ministers of Environment Forum. It is now shaping or informing national chapters being developed or established throughout the African region. The next steps, strategic priorities for this year, are to implement the Western Cape training program and to support the flagship programs of Women in Environment. Okay. The component of our work, the soft, fluffy issues, which are still equally important though, in the awareness component or strategic program area, we are implementing the National Waste Management Campaign, the Make Mzansi Beautiful. I'm sure you've seen some of the campaign stuff in your annual report. This is really out of the call of the National Waste Management Act to roll out a mass national education program on waste management, but it in particular addresses or starts with anti-littering. Chair, it's actually the Make Mzansi Beautiful. I think it's a more street and funky version of the Keep South Africa Clean, and we're implementing that with the department, Chief Directorate Waste Management, as well as our colleagues in Buyisa eBag. I think Nolwazi mentioned that in the looking at the broader areas of Buyisa, this is one of the programs that they have attempted to partner as a Buyisa program as well. We are implementing a climate change awareness program. Albie will maybe play a clip around that, because I think we never get the opportunity to actually let portfolio committee members comment on messaging and campaigns. But I think this year in particular needs all of the institutions to be engaged in climate change awareness and in guiding the messages that go out, particularly in the build-up to COP17. Honourable members, as I indicated, this is the year that the climate change policy will be published. It's also the year of South Africa's hosting of COP17. We should not have South Africans still being mystified about what is climate change. So the idea is really to roll out a massive program. In fact, it has started already. I'll be launched a month ago. And will continue up until COP17. We do hope that National Treasury will respond favorably to our request for funding to take it right up to COP17. Chair, if you'll indulge us, we just want to play the 3-minute radio drama of...
Department of Environmental Affairs, National Motor Race.
Thanks for indulging us, Chair and members. Okay, it is a bit long. It is meant to be an educational radio drama, but it really does address even some of the myths that are out there about climate change and that it's a punishment for not keeping to traditions. And then also looking at, rather than the doom and gloom scenario, but what is it that we can encourage and motivate people to do so that they take personal actions? Okay. Thanks. Chair, just the Greening Legacy Report, which we've done in partnership with the Department of Environment Affairs as part of Lessons Learned from Greening 2010, will also be published this year. Next slide. We have also trained 200 youth green ambassadors during the World Cup, really creating short-term employment, but more specifically building a pool of eco-consciousness amongst youth whilst increasing their skills levels and also generating career interest for youth in the environment field. In terms of our intergovernmental work, or that work I said that we're supporting governments at all three levels and across departments, the capacity building support we're providing to the municipalities through the eco-towns, especially on putting in place integrated waste management plans as well as open space plans. We have signed an MOU with COCTA for them to promote eco-towns as a model for town planning, and also we are partnering with them on their Clean Cities, Clean Towns program. They don't implement all of these interventions, they just look at waste management. We've put out a climate challenge to national departments, indicating to them they could take small, medium, and longer-term actions as part of their climate change responses at national departments, and propose to them what kind of actions they could take and challenge them to report on progress on these by COP17. Chair, we are assisting KwaNaloga, which is the KwaZulu-Natal Local Government Association, to develop a climate change planning tool, really to assist the local municipalities in KwaZulu-Natal to respond to climate change. That is where it will be piloted, and after the pilot, it will be made available to all municipalities to develop climate change response strategies as well as measure their vulnerability. I did indicate that we're working with the Department of Energy on the Youth Energy Auditors and Energy Savers Program. A particular focus for this year under climate change from our side and in partnership with the department is to roll out the climate awareness campaign that is really targeted at making sure people understand what climate change is, understand what it is they can do, as well as also understand that there's now there will be a climate change policy in South Africa, and particularly getting businesses geared up to make the necessary adaptations in their business processes so that they're ready for climate change response and can position themselves to develop some of those low-carbon technologies that China is currently exporting to the rest of the world. Chair, as a key social mobilization intervention for COP17, we have developed the Climate Train, which is really to provide voice for civil society and communities who probably won't be able to get to COP17, but would have an opportunity to express what their aspirations are, what their initiatives are, what they are doing at the local level to deal with and live in a climate-changing environment. and to say what it is that they would like to see coming out of COP17. And the provincial mini summits will also serve as an awareness. We're working with ALBE, Chief Directorate Communications, on all of these climate change and climate awareness interventions. And this will be intensified up to COP17 and actually serve as a legacy program after COP. Next slide. Chair, that is the climate train, in case you were wondering. What is the climate train? It would be an educational vehicle. I think members probably know about the Pella Pepper train, which is providing health services and HIV/AIDS education to remote communities. This climate train is educating people about environment and climate awareness. Each province would have their own carriage. We've actually gotten PRASA, the Passenger Rail Association, to provide a physical train, and it will have a range of interventions. The faith leaders would be mobilized in each of these towns, as well as creating a National Youth for Climate Change chapter. In particular, I want to say, members, that we have proposed that this is not just pre-COP or for COP. PRASA have agreed to make this train available even beyond COP, and that it continues as one of the legacy programs of COP, really being used to educate people on climate and environment. And in particular, one of the other areas, and I think you can't read it there, that we've proposed as a legacy program is a regional or national climate and green energy center. What we find happens far too often with climate change resources is that most of them are adapted, or most of them are targeted at industrial development. And we think that there are people currently who don't have access to energy, and some of those perhaps more affordable energy solutions, clean energy solutions, for instance, could be innovated in a national climate center like that, which invests in research and innovation in these low-cost adaptation solutions.
You need to move quicker now. It's almost 1 o'clock, so okay. Please just touch on the last few points.
Okay. Administration and governance, we went down to a staff complement of 7. With our fundraising efforts for the Eco Towns program, we were able to come back up to a 21-member staff complement, and for this financial year, we will have 31 members. That's our organogram, Chair. I think you have it in your presentation. I'm sorry if you can't see it on the screen. Regards audit and governance, we are fully PFMA compliant because we get some of our funding from government. Since inception, we've had unqualified audits. Our auditors are Grant Thornton. We are governed by the Board of Trustees, as Zandile indicated. We have 5.
At one stage, you had as many board members as you had staff. I think that's a unique organization.
Chair, we've actually, we keep our administration very thin. We have just a 4 million rand operating budget. We have 2 vacancies on the board, which the department and WESA need to appoint members to. Those are the trustees, Zandile Husia, Vuyo Mbuli, Mike Friedman of Free Thinkers, Joanne Yawich, who was with the department and was the DEET representative, and who's now with the National Business Initiative, and Yolan Friedman, who's from the Endangered Wildlife Trust. Our core funding from DEA, 4 million for the previous year and 8 million for this year. We have managed to raise $8 million from the National Lotteries Board, and we've raised EcoTowns project funding of $225 million for all of the local government support interventions. Okay, Chair, I'll address this. Maybe I should just address it now. Initially, the idea was that Indaluyetu would be able to sustain itself from fees from eco-labeling, but I think we don't have that kind of great uptake from business currently. I do think once the climate change policy comes in, there would be greater efforts by business to apply and to comply with eco and environmental performance. But if I can just demonstrate, Chair, in the past year, we have received 40,000 rand only from eco-labeling license fees. Issues for consideration. As members, we would ask you to use your influence with colleagues in National Treasury Portfolio Committee, really promoting green procurement, because that will really assist to drive eco-labeling if government is seen to be spending its money with environmentally preferable products and services. We think there will be a greater uptake by industry. We also ask you to consider using the trained graduates in the greening of Parliament. We would like to partner with Parliament in this intervention of greening Parliament. We would like you also to champion the COP17 social mobilization platforms and be ambassadors for climate awareness in your own rights. Chair, can we go through the budget presentation quickly?
Is that your whole staff?
Yes.
I see you seriously discriminate against people like me who are old.
Actually,
the board is all the ages in the board. Okay, wisdom is in the right place. That's why the board sometimes was as big as the staff.
But you can see where the energy is, Chair, at the implementation level.
I can see all those young people. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson and fellow committee members. In terms of funding, the funding is effectively from the Department of Environmental Affairs. The budget for the 2011-2012 financial year is 8 million rand. As my CEO had mentioned earlier, funding is derived from implementation fees from the projects that we undertake. The EcoTowns project, which is for 10 municipalities, is 225 million. The implementation fees that can be derived from that project would be around the amount of 10.9 million. The other funding that was secured through the National Lotteries Trust Distribution Fund is in the region of 8.8 million for this financial year. The total funding that the Indaluyetu would aim to receive in this financial year would be 253 million. Thank you. From a budget summary point of view, from an overhead point of view, you look at EcoTowns, 10 municipalities having an 89% slice of the total budget, a National Youth Development Skills Program being the BEAT program, 1% eco-labeling is 2%. You would look at greening 2011, 3%. Operating expenses for Indaluyetu is sitting at 2%. Capital expenditure is in the region of 500,000, 0%. Staff costs 2%. Thank you. Considering that EcoTowns forms the major component of Indaluyetu's funding, I looked at a slide to break down the deliverables, which my CEO had went through earlier. Street cleaning and sweeping the deliverable accounts for 53% of the total budget of EcoTowns. Under street cleaning and sweeping, we account for the 2,800 plus workers, which would be the wages that they earn from that area. Materials and equipment, 21%, and then all the other deliverables. Would you like me to continue? continue?
Yes.
Okay. From a percentage point of view, 64% of the budget is spent on workers' salaries, 3% spent on administration, 4% spent on training, 15% spent on transportation, 7% spent on community facilitation, 7% budget spent on planning. Thank you.
Chair, those workers are not in Daluyetu staff. They're in the municipalities.
From a materials and equipment point of view, 21% of the total project budget, 86% of the budget spent on equipment, provision of 11,600 street burns, and we alluded to the fact that 2,500 plus have actually been installed since inception. A provision of 8,000 wheelie burns, provision of over a million plastic bags, 7% of the budget spent on protective clothing. The next slide. The National Youth Skills Development Program, popularly known as the BEAT program internally, 35 learners pilot program in Gauteng, 16-week training, approximately 4 months, theoretical training, practical training, tutorials, and assessments. Okay. From an eco-labeling point of view, it's 2% of the overall budget. We would look at resourcing it, setting up the standards that are required, and we've outlined a detailed budget in terms of that. From a year-on-year point of view of expenditure, you're looking at 72% growth in overall budget year-on-year, from the period 2011 to the period 2012. Significant growth, 75% growth in the budget for EcoTowns project year-on-year. And there would be a 63% planned growth in budget for BEAT program. From an operating expenditure point of view, we grouped up operating expenditure under headings of communications and marketing, administration and governance. The terminology of staff welfare and training would be more staff costs and training and development of staff, legal and consultants, IT and telecommunications, office-related expenditure would include the office rental, travel and subsistence. We have an operating budget of 4.1 million rand. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Dr. Kwan? Sana?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think it is a wonderful presentation. Yeah. It took near the 1 hour. Yeah. But I think it's a regarding some of the questions I just like asking for your budget, your total funding. For depending to the CFO say total funding is 253 million. But your budget come from the Department of the Environment and the Department of Tourism. Because from your annual report, I think the first question is your annual report audited. Financial statement still unqualified. Yeah. So I didn't see the qualified one. Yeah. The still unqualified. So from the your auditor is the comment number one. Your funding some the income you're not very clear in your financial statement. So now this is my question is, you from NYDA you also get some funding. How much you get from NYDA? And some funding you get from the Germany, GIZ. I want to know how much you get. And especially for the EPWP, because the EPWP created for 2,800 jobs. Then I think the CEO say, this 2,800 jobs, it came from municipality works. I want to identify, this from the municipality works or from the outside unemployment people. Because it's quite a big difference. Because your big issue is the EcoTown. Because you 89% budget spent in the EcoTown. Then from your financial annual report inside, for the 750 people already signed a 2-year contract, this is a previous year, or there is a current financial year. Because if from current financial year, you say 2011 to 2012, you will be getting 2,800 from any head the income. So this is 750 people is from EPWP. So this is a payment by contract by the from the US side. You make a contract. So it means you make a contract. You payment for these workers. So where this money came from? EPWP. Because you identified. So you didn't show to the committee, say, EPWP funding, how much you get. And, Jefferson, I think it's... other issue is... your eco-town, because I'm in this committee just about 6 months here. Yeah. I don't know this eco-town since the start of which year. It's from the last year or period, 5 years ago, I don't know. But I firmly did this report. You budget, the load budget is 89% in the eco-town. And can you tell me, because you achieve how many percent for your target for this eco-town, then how you can select these 10 projects to the different city and the different province? Because I see this 10 projects not came from all the 9 provinces. Some provinces not including inside. Why? Then how you select the stand? How you get this label can select to say, I want to go to the Inkanda. I want to go to the Eastern Cape or the Mpumalanga. So this one I like to know. Okay, I think I first keep this one. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. Mr. Susana.
Thank you, Jefferson. Jefferson, let me thank the CEO for the good presentation made in this meeting. And I must appreciate your work. This is a very good work that you are doing for your country. But you have mentioned only 3 provinces where you are implementing your programs. That is KZN, Eastern Cape, and Gauteng. I just want to know, how do you coordinate your activities throughout the country in order to cover almost every each province of this country? And secondly, how do you relate with the provinces, because there are departments that are dealing with such matters except the municipalities, and you have made very clear that you do have a contact with the municipalities and you are assisting them very well. We appreciate on that. And also, how can you maybe ensure that you relate with the community structures, because there are community structures that are dealing with such matters that are related to waste management, greening, and whatever, and the empowerment thereof, the publicity. How can you maybe advertise your company in order to make sure that they access your information and your phone numbers where they can, in fact, contact you? And also, Chair, I hear Duane, the CEO, was talking about the climate change. She spoke about the launching of a climate change last month. And one of our officials said, yes. I was surprised. I'm a member of the committee. I don't know any climate change being launched. I should think we need to be clarified, Chair. The climate change program is launched last month. I don't know whether you are aware of particular project, but one of our officials...
I see we're not one of the partners. We're not...
Yes.
We left out of...
Okay, sure. Okay, sure. Those are questions that I'm posing to the company. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Tsotsi.
Also about the team for the project done. On challenges, the statement saying you believe in separate roles between municipal officials and service providers. And we have project managers at municipal levels, municipality levels. Yeah? I'm thinking of municipal manager now.
and also the Waste Management Department. What is your relationship with them? Because they actually do almost the same thing that you are doing. And especially with the signing of the MOU with the COCTA, is there any relationship with the said departments? And also, do you have some maybe joint programs with the community groupings that are doing recycling for a living? And most of them are a little bit older, and some of them pensioners. I'm just trying to emphasize on what the chairperson has said about discriminating in terms of age. Yeah. I think they will be accommodated. And on progress, I'll ask this question, that is 33 youth unemployed. I'll ask it in conjunction with the one that speaks about 200 green ambassadors, young people as well, that we'll need a breakdown in terms of the region, so that when we do these campaigns, we make use of them just to be able to locate them. And the organogram, one wishes to see, you know, a clear, you know, picture of this, so that we could monitor if there's progress on transformation. There's the CEO and whoever, there's the CEO being a man, there's will be a man, all of that. And also to upload you on the representation, Chairperson, you see here, it's like the women are leading this team here. Hence, this good presentation of our theme.
There's a lot of assumptions in that thing that you've just said, but okay. Ms. Bengu and then Ms. Mungane.
Thank you, Chair. Could the Indalwet please expand on the approaches used in rural and urban areas? Because I haven't heard the presenter deeply talking more about the awareness campaign in rural and remote rural areas. Because the people there mostly are cutting trees to get wood to make fire. On the other side, we are talking about the greening of their areas. And the other one is also, do you assist those people in those areas to know more about what is meant by the climate change? Thank you.
Ms. Mungane.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just also echoing to applaud the CEO, but I just want the clarity. I just want to know, do you have a membership? If you have, how much do people, when they want to join the affiliation fees, how much is that? The last one, you mentioned that you launched the, especially you are dealing, you also deal with women. Are you able to expand to other provinces? If you don't, what is the problem? Thank you.
I from your input, there's no understanding. When I asked you the question about the trust, from your input, there's no explanation to me how the governance works vis-a-vis government, your department. I mean, I don't have a clue what your working relationship is. I see you brought out an advert together, the one with the song and the thing. You know, there's nothing in your input to show that there is a relationship and how it works. I mean, you know. So maybe you should just end off with that also. Those are the questions. You can answer them, please.
Thanks, Chair. Let me start with Honorable Yang. Okay. The expanded public works program, you said there's 253 million funding for the eco towns. How much do we get from expanded public works? All of this is expanded public works program funding. The whole eco towns program is supported by expanded public works program funding through the SRPP, the Social Responsibility Policy and Programs program. National Youth Development Agency, we don't get any funding from them. They're a partner in that they provide the entrepreneurship.
They really spend all their money on their conference or their...
on the kissing conference.
Yeah. So
okay.
Nothing for you.
Yes. We don't get any funding from them. They've provided life skills and entrepreneurship training for the youth energy auditors. GIZ funded, or rather, let's say, contributed €250,000, and all of that was in technical support to develop the training course, and none of it was transferred to Indaloyetu. It was to engage technical consultants to develop the training course content. Yes, the difference between the 750, Honourable Member, the report you're reading is 2009-10. The program was just, I think, 4 months old then, so we had only managed to employ 750 by then. So the 2,800 number that we're reporting now is the total number that we've managed to achieve to date, so since then. So the report that you have is the 2009-10 report. We will give you, or once our 2010-11 report, annual report is published, you'll see the figures that we have mentioned here and spoken about here. When was it started? October 2009. Why not each of the provinces? The program is implemented in 7 of 9 provinces. The only 2 provinces where it's not implemented is the Western Cape and the Northwest Province. And the reason for that is we did try to get funding for all 9 provinces. However, the Department of Environment Affairs was implementing a similar program in the Western Cape. I think they've implemented or supported Kuyasa in Khayelitsha, where they are also doing a job creation skills development program with a solar water heating program. So they had already committed funds to that program of a similar nature. And in the Northwest Province, the SRPP had already funded a similar greening waste management program in Mafeking, which was going to support setting up waste management enterprises as a World Cup greening program. And that's why we didn't get funding for those 2 provinces.
Chair, if I may also add, what's also important to note is that the EcoTowns project is actually a prototype. And so in rolling out and demonstrating successes, we'd then be able to take it to the next level. And so part of our reporting process is to demonstrate that it is in fact making a difference, and that we're beginning to see an impact, and in fact a lot of it is measurable.
And if anything, we would like to see all towns becoming eco-towns. That's our call for COP17 and climate change, but it will take time. But that is why we're really engaged with COGTA in promoting this model as a model for town management. How did we select the municipalities? Firstly, first 3 programs that we had already started greening programs with the dirtiest towns. So the department runs a cleanest, greenest town competition. And what we said we would do is work with those who continuously try to enter but never manage to make it anyway because they've got such serious waste management challenges. And so we started a greening program separately without this funding with those 3 towns. When we managed to raise funding from the department, we tried to get 1 in each province plus these 3 dirtiest towns, if I can say, or towns with serious environmental challenges. And we then ended up with a program of 10 municipalities, which are a range of rural, peri-urban, and urban settings. One is a township, because we wanted to include a model as a township in the program to see how it works in peri-urban settings. In addition, we also approached the provinces. We approached the municipalities. Municipalities had to be willing to accept to be an owning agent of the project and take responsibility for the program after our exit. We also did specifically request to implement, because we needed a rural setting, implement in Nkandla, not for obvious reasons, Chair, but because we did believe that if we're able to demonstrate the potential of this program to contribute to job creation, skills development, perhaps there's a real opportunity that somebody up there might realize that this portfolio or this sector is not a tree-hugging sector and that it actually does create jobs and contribute to national priorities. We specifically did not cooperate or choose to go to metros except for a township in Tshwane, because we did find that lots of money had gone into these as host cities for the World Cup, so lots of investment went to the host city, so we specifically didn't include any host cities. How do we relate with provinces? We set up a provincial project stakeholder committee. Provinces are included in that, and the provinces are or provide some oversight for the implementation of the programs. It is, though, the EcoTowns is largely a municipal support program. On the youth energy auditor program, that program specifically collaborates with provinces. We also, on the climate awareness and climate change activities, our key partner there is the province. Chair, you indicated you're not reflected as a partner. One of my last slides was asking if the portfolio committee could, as members in their own right, be champions of the climate awareness program. So this was our opportunity to ask you, and also our wish, our desire to partner with you on the greening of Parliament. How do we relate with community structures? In each of these municipalities, we establish a stakeholder forum as well as a community forum. And in fact, we insisted on the establishment of a community forum, which includes the hawkers associations, the taxi associations, the retailers in the area, schools, faith leaders. One, because it's important that they know these resources are being spent and they make inputs to how those resources are being spent, but also just to say they actually help us to keep the municipalities accountable, because every 2 months we report to both of the forums and give them reports on progress on the project as well as spending. The climate change program that was launched, Chair, the climate awareness program was launched last month. It started off with a print campaign as well as social mobilization. I'm sure you might have seen that in all of the major newspapers. You will get to hear a lot more about it now. Albie just played the radio scripts, the material that's been prepared for radio that you will begin to hear on the radios now. Do we have membership fees? No, we don't have membership fees. We're a not-for-profit trust. the only small area where you have some kind of subscription is on the eco-labeling, and that's for companies who have requested for their products to be eco-labeled. Women in Environment is really an intervention of the waste or people involved in recycling, people involved in solar water heating, and those are generally your older women. So much of the Women in Environment is not your youth, they're your older generation. Chair, I think, okay, how is it that we are involved with the department? We were founded as a legacy program. As you know, the Department of Environment Affairs was the focal coordinating department for the World Summit on Sustainable Development, and the department contributed or committed to contribute operational funding to the trust, as well as operational funding for the establishment of the eco-labeling program. Beyond that, we raise funds from elsewhere. We do report, we do submit reports to the department on a quarterly basis, but because not all of our funding is coming from Treasury, we are not a formal entity. Was that everything? Oh, how do we coordinate with the recycling industries? Actually, in the eco towns, in the enterprise development, what we try to do is develop the people who are working on landfill sites, as well as collectors, the informal collectors who are already there, and the recycling agents, and we start with them, involving them or registering them, workshopping them into an enterprise, and we look to invest the enterprise development training and resources in those people who are currently doing that kind of work in the eco-towns. So we capacitate those industries that are there already.
You're getting 250 million rand on the Public Works program. Why aren't you accounting to Public Works then, at least?
We
or
do,
where do you account for these public work programs?
We do report into the expanded public works program through the social responsibility policy programs of the Department of Environment Affairs. All of the job days and job numbers are submitted through them. Otherwise, we would be, if we did it directly to the expanded public works, we would be double counting.
So you do that through the department?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. I think it was a very detailed input that makes one understand a little bit better how the organization functions. On most issues, the fact that they've got a clean, unqualified report helps a lot. All that's left for me is to thank you very much, particularly having your director here. It's useful to have some older people here as well. I'm only joking. So thank you very much. You can see from the committee we're relatively happy with what you're doing, and keep up the good work. Thank you. That's the end of our work for the week. We will be meeting on Tuesday again. Where? Venue to be confirmed. We're still negotiating. Next week it's Water Affairs, the entities from Water Affairs, the Research Commission, TLTTTT something, and Kobwa. And then on the Wednesday, it's the Water Agency Management, the CMAs, okay, the two of them. So next week is Water Affairs Week, okay? Thank you very much. Chileka will send out the program today to you. You should have in your pigeonholes this afternoon, okay, for the rest of the week. Thank you, Department. I still don't have my list of tasks from your public hearings with the department. I don't know what's going wrong in that department, that suddenly I haven't got that list yet. I, of course, would want a list from yesterday and today, all the tasks from yesterday and today. I'm talking about your one, your department's hearings, many months ago, weeks ago. There's no list. I haven't received any list. No list. I received in January. I haven't received another list. So I'm still waiting for that. Obviously, the department is slipping. And then from these 2 days, please let me have the list sooner. From these 2 days. All the tasks and activities. Thank you for all the slippage. And we'll see you on Tuesday, the Department of Water Affairs entities. Okay. Oh, yes.